I call this meeting to order. And start with your name, if you would, the translator.
This is Javi Infante Varas. I'm one of the English-Spanish interpreters during this meeting. We have a team of interpreters on Zoom and in person tonight, today, supporting the meeting. And I just want to guide folks really quickly on how to connect to the channels on Zoom. And also, if you are in English or Spanish monolingual, you will need a device. Please feel welcome to go ahead and grab it from Claudia here in the back. I will repeat myself in Spanish. Muy buenas tardes, mi nombre es Javi Infante Varas. Soy parte del equipo de intérpretes que están en Zoom y aquí presencialmente apoyando la dinámica bilingüe inglés-español. Voy a orientarles brevemente en cómo conectarse a sus canales en Zoom y también les invito a las personas monolingües, ya sea en inglés o español, a que vayan a agarrar un dispositivo con Claudia que está acá atrás distribuyéndolos. So really quickly, again, a gentle reminder, if you are only fluent in English or only fluent in Spanish, please go ahead and look for that globe at the bottom of the Zoom window. If you don't see it right away, you can see it in the menu that says More. Go ahead and click on that. You should see the word Interpretation and then the option for English or Spanish. Go ahead and select English. If you're on a mobile device, make sure you tap on Done. Muy bien. Para las personas que están en Zoom, sí, por favor, podrían buscar un globo terráqueo que está en la parte de abajo de la ventana de Zoom. Si no lo ven inmediatamente, lo van a poder ver en el menú que dice More o Más. Van a encontrar que dice la palabra Interpretación y luego les da la opción de inglés o español. En su caso, por favor, escojan español. Y si están en un dispositivo móvil, asegúrense también de pulsar en Done o Finalizado para activar el canal. If we need you to slow down, if you will be on the microphone at some point in person, we will go like this to you. Please, if you see us, that's what it means. I know folks will not be looking at us in the back, so we want to kindly invite the commissioners, if you see us do this hand sign, that means slow down. Please do it with us. And for Zoom, it will be little turtle emojis for the same thing. Thank you so much. Gracias. Si necesitamos que hablen un poco más lento, vamos a hacer estas señas. En Zoom es una tortuguita y ya no quito más tiempo. Les doy la palabra a la presidenta de la Junta y podemos iniciar. So I pass over the word to you. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to let the interpreter get back into her spot. This is something we don't do every meeting, but we wanted, right after calling the meeting to order, to deliver the instructions for interpretation for those who will need it during this meeting. So, all the representatives of the commission are present. I am Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis. I am joined in person today by We are not joined in person by the state controller, so let me rephrase that. We are joined by Zoom by Christina Kunkel, the deputy state controller, and the commissioner alternate for state controller Cohen. And we are also joined by Michelle Peralt, representing the Department of Finance.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I would like to identify members of the staff of the commission participating virtually for this hybrid meeting. We have Zoom co-host Mike Farina and meeting liaison Kim Linetta.
Thank you very much. So for the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms and islands, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude to the Chumash, Tongvu, and Gabrielino on whose lands this meeting is being held. I also want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. The next item of business will be public comment. Before I open public comment period for items not on the agenda, first let me thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our meeting. Now I want to turn it over to Ms. Cato to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible. Ms. Cato?
Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. There will be two public comment sessions. We will take public comment during the first session for a maximum of 30 minutes due to the extent of our meeting agenda. Our second public comment session will occur at the end of the meeting for those who do not get called at the first session. The chair does reserve the right to limit the public comment session timelines at that second session. If you would like to speak during either of our open public comment periods, please complete an electronic request to speak form available on our homepage. For both sessions, we will take those members of the public who are here in person first, and then hear comments from those members of the public who are participating virtually. We will call on you in the order in which you submitted the electronic request to speak form. For those participating virtually, please make sure you have your microphones and phones muted to avoid background noise. To help us call on you through Zoom, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section, one of two ways. First, if you are attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you are new to Zoom and have joined our meeting using the Zoom application, click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you are joining via phone, you must press *9, not pound, but *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make comment. If you are calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSpan live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using the Zoom application and your phone. We will call on individuals who have then raised their hands in the order that they are raised, using the name they registered or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. Remember, you have a limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow these guidelines or, worse, dismiss them from the meeting. I want to remind everyone that we have two general public comment opportunities, one at the beginning of the meeting and one at the end. If anyone is having logistical or technical difficulties, please know we will have another opportunity to provide comments. The Commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. The address is slc.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. I have received various emails from parties that have been shared with the commissioners prior to this meeting. If we receive any emails during the meeting, they will also be shared with the commissioners and be made available on our website, along with the public comment emails we have already received. Chair Kunalakis, that concludes my hybrid meeting instructions, and we're ready to move forward to general public comment.
Thank you, Ms. Cato. Our next order of business is the public comment period. If anyone would like to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, staff will call on those who are here in person first. Next, we will move on to those joining us virtually. Michelle, please call on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Our first speaker is Adam Lavernes. Following Adam will be Peter Kaz. Adam, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Michelle, is this a virtual speaker?
He was signed up in person.
Can you give his name again?
Adam Lavernes.
Okay, it does not appear as though anyone is responding to that. Who is the next speaker?
Our next speaker is Peter Kaz. Following Peter will be Neil Desai.
They're virtual. Michelle, can you see if they are looking to participate virtually? And maybe the first speaker as well. Was that maybe misunderstood? Was that a virtual speaker also?
Let me double check. Sorry, one second.
Okay. Are they on?
We do not see him on Zoom at this time.
Okay, the second speaker is the second speaker on Zoom? I think I see Neil. That's the third speaker.
Yes, we do have Neil Desai.
Okay. Mr. Desai, please proceed with your comment.
Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis, commissioners. Hope you all are doing well today. My name is Neil Desai with the National Parks Conservation Association. We advocate for the protection of our parks and public lands. I wanted to speak with you today to flag something about the Cadiz groundwater mining proposal. But first, I wanted to thank you for your work at the December meeting and your decision making on this topic, which was supported by tribes, conservation, environmental justice, and community organizations that showed up to give comment on the issue. At that meeting, concerns were raised with Cadiz's finances and lack of transparency was noted. As you may know, Cadiz is a publicly traded company, so it files reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And last week, the company filed its annual report, and this report speaks to the concerns the commission raised about finances and transparency. Regarding finances for the calendar year 2024, Cadiz's report states, and I quote, "We incurred a net loss of $31.1 million for the year ended December 31st, 2024. End quote. That builds on the net loss of $31.4 million from the year prior. I know this is an issue that was of interest to the commission, so I wanted to provide that update. But now regarding transparency, it's what Cadiz is not saying that is concerning. In its annual report section on permitting requirements, the company continues to not disclose that its pipeline is subject to Water Code 1815, which is the oversight the commission retains under the SB 307 legislation. As you may recall, late last year, Cadiz tried to convince the commission that its pipeline, which it purchased from El Paso Natural Gas, is not subject to this Water Code 1815. Your lawyers correctly informed Cadiz that the company was incorrect and it must seek authorization from the commission. But given what continues to be reported or not reported by Cadiz, we believe additional communication is warranted from the commission to the company to remind it of its responsibilities and ensuring that this communication is in some fashion publicly available. It's timely and important because Cadiz continues to state in its marketing materials that its water delivery starts next year, but that's not possible because the review that you have under 1815 takes 2 years to complete once an application is filed, and an application has not been filed yet. So we would just respectfully request a new letter from the commission staff to Cadiz, again, reminding it of its legal responsibilities to seek commission authorization. Your oversight is critical to this matter, to the health of our state and the water and desert. It will support transparency in this matter. Thank you very much for your consideration. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your meeting.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Eileen Boken.
Eileen Boken, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, speaking on my own behalf regarding sand mining in San Francisco Bay. Most of the sand mining in San Francisco Bay is in the Central Bay around Angel Island and Alcatraz. The total yearly revenue to the state for these leases around Angel Island and Alcatraz is $1.5 million. However, the environmental damage caused by sand mining in San Francisco Bay to the coastal areas off San Francisco, Daly City, and Pacifica is in the multi-millions. When these lease renewals come before the State Lands Commission, I would strongly urge the commission to significantly reduce the yearly amounts allowed and significantly reduce the lease renewal period to a maximum of 5 years, not 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Garrett Katata. Following Garrett will be Mary Fitzpatrick.
Hi. Hi, commissioners. How are you doing? My name is Garrett Katata, and I am a UC Berkeley recent alum, environmentalist, and renewable energy researcher working with America's Green Corps on advancing the mission of a special lab initiated at Cal Berkeley. The situation developing in Santa Barbara regarding Sable's efforts to reactivate the aging gap.
Hold on, Garrett, can I stop you? Is this?
I'm sure.
Oh, this, I'm sorry, this is not on the agenda. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Right. Okay.
My apologies.
Has created an opportunity for the great state of California and UC researchers to engage in pioneering a technological peace and conflict resolution strategy that reconstructs non-operational oil infrastructure into the renewable grid. While decommissioning of Gaviota's Coast non-operational oil infrastructure like Platform Holly has been proceeding, Sable's efforts to reactivate the San Ynez unit has highlighted the dilapidated state of the infrastructure network and the serious concerns of the community regarding oil and gas operations in the Santa Barbara Channel, where restoration is underway. I believe that more data and information is needed to make a holistic assessment of the most feasible next steps for these offshore platforms collectively, and am creating dialogue about this during the month of April. It is with great honor and respect that our UC-led lab group offers a solution that bridges both sides of this conflict for a mutually beneficial outcome, which supports California's sustainability goals as well as the grid resilience goals of Santa Barbara County. The work we are proposing also addresses how to work with local maritime industries and community-based manpower for this new venture. The first step would be to install an HD fire weather watch camera and weather node on this structure while simultaneously preserving the aquaculture attached to the structure itself. Of course, this doesn't answer the question of what to do with the other oil structures. And this the transition that away from offshore oil that is happening need not happen immediately, but rather gradually over time. And so we're seeking support for the CEQA work, in particular for Platform Holly, and the follow-on engineering developments. The Gaviota Coast oil infrastructure is an ideal location to host the research and development work related to Green Lighthouse Project. If Sable's position is flexible, then perhaps they would be equally interested in putting some resources towards this project. If it includes continuing to drill in some form, that could also include them as well. So this method is primarily on behalf of the founder and creative director of America's Green Corps. I, as an individual, hold an open stance to this issue and am willing to include Sable in the dialogue for the advancement of causes that are mutually beneficial, that advance sustainable energy in the Santa Barbara area while benefiting the community. So ask yourself, if not here, then where? Not us, then who? If not now, then when? Thank you, and I look forward to garnering support for this decision-making process.
Thank you, Garrett. Go Bears. And Michelle, our next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Mary Fitzpatrick.
Michelle?
They do have their hand raised on Zoom, but if you want, we can circle back. Adam and Peter are now present to give comment.
Let's go ahead and proceed with Mary. Mary can unmute her microphone and proceed. Michelle, I can't see all of the Zoom participants, so I can't tell what's happening.
Mary, if you can unmute yourself.
There we go. No.
I'm not sure.
That's state lands. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not able to be promoted, so we're trying to see if she'll unmute so she can make her comments.
Mary, we'll try one more time. If you can press the button on your Zoom screen to unmute yourself and proceed. Okay, we're going to circle back to you and go ahead and go back to the two people who were at the top of the speaker list.
Yes, our next speaker will be Adam Laverns. Following Adam will be Peter Kaz.
In person.
Yes, in person, a little late. Deep apologies. We came from Newport and encountered more traffic than anticipated, so I apologize. I have a couple slides that I would like called up. These slides, Lieutenant Governor, you saw at the last State Lands Commission meeting. Ms. Kunkel, as they alternate, this is new for some people. I think Mr. Dumlau was at the last meeting as well. But as I said at the last meeting, in 2022, Newport Beach had an agenda item to purchase back mooring permits. Somebody will describe a mooring permit later. They were going to spend $1 million a year over 30 years to acquire these things back. And about a year and three quarters later, on the next slide, the city decided it makes more economic sense to confiscate them all. And that has displeased a lot of people. These have existed for a long time. And they provide affordable access, which is becoming more and more difficult in Newport Beach. I made a misstatement at the last meeting. I said that the rates the city intends to impose are 13% higher than state benchmarks. I watched video of the last meeting yesterday. I should have said they are 1,330% higher than the State Lands Commission benchmark. 13% is a little bit palatable. 1,300% isn't. There have been a lot of staff changes at State Lands, as I'm sure you're aware of. We're told that perhaps a new executive officer will be seated maybe in June. So this is kind of kicking off again. And we're grateful that staff, you know, has been receptive to listening to us. The city has seemed to be kind of manipulating things a little bit, and we just want a fair an equitable process. They've had at least three different plans the city has that all result in the same thing, which is the elimination of affordable access for those who use mooring permits. There's a conversion of the city mooring permits to city or publicly held mooring permits to city licenses with the high rates. They've also proposed replacing all the mooring tackle, which is privately owned and maintained, and then pays rent for placement over state lands. That private ownership is what keeps moorings affordable. The city has seemed to find challenges in doing anything in a cost-effective manner, and we just want to maintain access for people who can't own or rent real property in Newport Beach. And again, apologies for being late. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much. Michelle?
Our next speaker is Peter Kaz.
Sorry for being late again. We had a 2 hours drive. I have a slides to call, please. So in Newport, we own our own tackle. We own our own chain and buoy. We service them. We pay at the beginning. We pay for those permits a huge money. I mean that's been what we've been doing. So these moorings been developed like 100 years ago for the people that are not on the water. They don't have a beach round house, so they can have access to the water and enjoy the, access to the water in the harbor. I personally own and maintain my own mooring or as my property, and we also pay like every month we pay rent on top of that. And every time we don't use it, we have the city can sublet it to the others, and then we don't get anything from those, and then we still have to maintain. And we're kind of fine with that. We don't have any problem, as long as we just want to keep our mooring and the permittee and then have access to it to just continue with what we have. And I did some research with the city of San Diego, for example. They don't maintain their own mooring, and then they pay almost the same fee as we pay. So our fee is higher, which, and then there is also discrimination. What we pay for our mooring in the harbor, and then we have the houses that they pay almost dollar on the penny, which is a big discrimination. We think in general that the city is just trying to take away this mooring and then make it more expensive and more unaffordable for the people in Newport for the mooring permittees. And I'm hoping that you guys take a look at it and the discrimination, and take away the moorings, and just everything at the end of the day is going to just end up being more expensive for us. I hope you can help us and look at that. And sorry again to be late. Thank you so much.
And you're not late at all. Thank you for being here. Michelle, have we been able to figure out Mary's microphone?
Unfortunately, we have not. We recommend to Mary to please reach out to our help desk at slc.helpdesk@slc.ca.gov for technical assistance, and we hope to be able to call on her during our second public comment.
Okay. Do we have any other speakers?
At this point in time, no other hands are raised for comment.
Okay. Mary, if you could please reach out to the help desk, we'd be happy to hear from you in the second comment period. All right. Thank you, Michelle. That concludes our first public comment period. The next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's meeting of February 25th, 2025. May I have a motion to approve the minutes and a second?
So moved.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any objections to a unanimous vote? Motion passes unanimously. The next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Cato, may we have that report?
Thank you. I will keep my verbal acting executive officer's report very short. Additional information on the activities that have occurred since the last meeting can be found on my report on our webpage. If all goes well, this will be my last commission meeting as the acting executive officer, and I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank everyone for all of their assistance and support during these past few months. We've had a lot of changes and challenges thrown our way, and I would not have made it through without the help of everyone. I'd like to thank personally the commissioners. They've been great. They've been so very patient with me and their alternates in helping me navigate this new world. And also to thank the staff, because the team has been absolutely incredible in helping me get ramped up for this. This has definitely been executive officer by committee, and I just really wanted to share my appreciation. They've been amazing and such a source of strength and knowledge and support for me. So thank you very much. That concludes my EO report.
Well, thank you, Grace. You're optimistic on the timeline. We'll see how it goes, but you're doing a wonderful job. And not just you, but as you said, you're supported by a team of extremely experienced people, and it is already going seamlessly. All right. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Commissioners are... Oh, I'm so sorry. Before we move on from that, Michelle, do we have any public comments for the executive officer's report?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. So the next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Commissioners, are there any items that you would like to remove from the consent calendar?
I do not have an item to remove, but I do have a brief comment, if that's okay with
Please.
You, Chair Kunalakis.
Of course.
So, and this is, I'm sorry, I don't have the item number before me. Grace, can you remind me the item number for the Long Beach program plan?
It is item 47.
So in regards to item 47, the last time that this came before the commission, Controller Cohen requested two recommendations be added to the environmental justice category. I want to repeat those requests. One was to include an element that considers the social costs of extracting oil. particularly because the city is a trustee of state tidelands and it is within their fiduciary duty. For example, there is a measurable economic impact of poor public health outcomes. In the same vein, we want to ensure that the city collaborates with the local health department to fully account for the exposure of our minority and historically excluded communities in Long Beach. We know that oil drilling is linked with public health hazards that disproportionately impact Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So the city did include a few short sentences acknowledging the social cost of fossil fuel extraction in a general way, but did not acknowledge the specific social costs related to the specific operations in Long Beach. And also there's no explanation that I saw of collaboration efforts past and present with the local health department to fully account for the exposure. So today our vote on consent is to accept the report, to acknowledge that we received it, we're in receipt. I don't object to acknowledging that we've received the report, but Controller Cohen would like to repeat her request and direct the city to incorporate this information into a revised report to resubmit. And with that, I will move consent.
Okay, that was more than a comment, it sounded like. Grace, do we need to pull this from the consent item to bring that up, or is this...
If we wish, today's the last day. The program plan was submitted February 18th. We have 45 days in which to respond back with comments. Today is the last day to do that. If we want to pull this item from the consent calendar, we can, and then include direction from the commission back to the city with the two comments that Commissioner Kunkel has requested be added to the program plan. Ultimately, the action before the commission is really a pure acceptance of the plan itself. So we did place it on consent, so we had the opportunity to have it out in the world for individuals who are interested in commenting. But the option
sorry,
is
Grace,
yours.
Grace, I'm sorry. Can you guys help me out with this? Because that sounded like more than a comment. And so I would like to be able to keep this on consent and to accept the report as it is. It doesn't seem to me there's anything we need to do in order to be able to accept the report.
That's correct.
So I guess maybe, Commissioner, we should just relay back to Commissioner Kunkel what we can and cannot do if we vote to approve the consent calendar as it is. Do you want to go ahead and clarify that?
I'll jump in. Thank you, okay. Lieutenant Governor. Yeah, as it stands, the two requests that were identified by the controller in 2023's Long Beach plan were included in the original changes ordered by this commission. So okay. I think that the request ultimately that Commissioner Kunkel and the controller's office are identifying is that they would like a greater focus and a little bit more narrative kind of in the future. I think that is something that staff can continue to work on that doesn't necessarily require that we modify or change or order a different change okay. to the existing Long Beach program plan. So if that's the case, I think that's something that we can do here while continuing to keep this on consent.
Okay, thank you. So next then, let me call on Ms. Cato to indicate which items, if any, have been removed from the consent calendar.
Thank you, Chair. Consent item 35 is removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time. Consent item 3 is being moved from the consent agenda to the regular agenda.
Okay. So we have a motion to adopt the consent agenda from Commissioner Kunkel. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any objections to a unanimous vote? Motion carries. The next order of business will be the regular calendar. Ms. Cato?
Item 49 is an update on state legislation relevant to the California State Lands Commission.
And okay.
We have Sherry virtually. Oh, she just finished representing us at the legislative budget hearings.
Wonderful. Hello, Sherry.
Hello, Lieutenant Governor and Commissioners.
Please proceed with your presentation.
Okay. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, apologize. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor and Commissioners. This will just be a brief update. It is not an action item. We're about 3.5 weeks away from the first major policy committee deadline, which is a May 2nd deadline for policy committees to hear fiscal bills introduced in their house of origin, and the deadline for substantive amendments to spot bills passed a little over a week ago, which resulted in a new tranche of bills that staff is analyzing. And the Senate and Assembly Rules Committee will be referring those bills to policy committees in the coming week. We as a staff are monitoring about 30 bills, and about 10 of those directly affect the commission and are bills that we're analyzing in more depth. But given that it's still early in the process and most of those bills haven't had their first policy committee hearing, we aren't recommending that the commission take any action on those today. These include legislation to require the commission to inventory abandoned vessels in the Delta, participate in a geothermal energy strategic plan for the state, and update our leasing rents and royalties, and making artificial reefs eligible for conservation and mitigation banks if the reef is on sovereign land, and requiring a lease from the commission and that the commission consider a trust fund and other conditions. Other legislation that we are looking at closely is legislation sponsored by the Port of Oakland that would require the commission to expand the allowable uses on the port's public trust lands to spur economic development and attract new tenants to the port's granted lands and Jack London Square in particular. The bill requires the commission to take this action by July 2026. On the offshore wind energy front, there's new legislation that would create an offshore wind energy community capacity funding grant program at the Energy Commission, similar to legislation that was unsuccessful last year with a commission as a participating entity. Just wanted to touch on equity as well. There's legislation that would require state agencies to address racial equity in newer updated strategic plans and undertake a racial equity analysis. There's also legislation that creates a process for dispossessed property owners of property taken as a result of racially motivated eminent domain to seek compensable public property. Other legislation we're looking at include a bill that would create a process to designate state surfing reserves and a bill to require the Energy Commission to develop a plan to deploy alternative fuels at California's public seaports. And then as everyone's aware, there continues to be a heavy focus on legislative efforts to facilitate rebuilding in the wake of the Los Angeles fires, and also potential budget deficits resulting from actions flowing from the federal government. So that concludes my update. I'm happy to answer any questions. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Sherry. Michelle, do we have any public comments for item 49? Michelle?
We have no hands raised for comment on this item at this time.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? Yes, Commissioner Perot.
Sherry, just a quick question. What's the bill number again for the abandoned vessels, the Delta abandoned vessels?
AB 274 by Assemblymember Ransom.
And are we the only ones named, or is there other entities of responsibility in the bill? I'm sorry, I'm unfamiliar with it. I'm just curious.
No, great question. The State Lands Commission is designated as the state agency responsible for doing the inventory. So we are the only agency named in the bill.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Kunkel? Okay. This item is informational. No vote required. Item 50 is an informational report developed by commission staff titled Review of Lease Obligations and Assessment of Impacts to Public Trust Resources and Values, State Oil and Gas Leases, PRC 1824 and PRC 3150, Terminations, and 4H Shell Mounds Disposition. May we have the staff presentation, please?
Excellent. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name is Joe Fable. I'm a senior attorney here at the State Lands Commission. I'm joined today by Nicole Dabrowski, Chief of the Commission's Division of Environmental Science, Planning, and Management. Today, we're presenting information on a report staff developed reviewing lease obligations and an assessment of impacts to public trust resources by the 4-H shell mounds located in the Santa Barbara Channel. Next slide, please. In 1994, the Commission approved a project by Chevron USA to decommission four oil platforms in state waters. This was the first platform decommissioning project on the West Coast. And in 1996, platforms Hilda, Hazel, Heidi, and Hope were removed. As a part of the project approval, the commission allowed the shell mounds located under each platform to remain in place. At the time, no environmental impacts were identified by leaving the mounds, but the commission did place a stipulation requiring Chevron to conduct tests to verify whether commercial fishing trawlers could fish over the former platform sites without issue. The purpose of the stipulation was to ensure that shell mounds did not conflict with commercial fishing in the area and provided a benefit to trawlers from additional fishing grounds. Next slide, please. During early well drilling operations at the platforms, drill muds known to contain contaminants were used and, at the time, permitted to be discharged with cuttings, accumulating on the seafloor and causing piles to form beneath each platform. Over time, fallen encrusting invertebrates like mussels, barnacles, and scallops created a solid shell hash layer, roughly 1 to 7 feet thick over the drill mud. Siltation further accumulated, entombing the cuttings. Today, the shell mounds rise about 25 to 28 feet above the ocean floor with a diameter of 200 to 250 feet. Each of the four shell mounds cover roughly 1 acre in area each. Next slide, please. TrawlNet test in 1997 failed, and it became clear that with the loss of the platforms as a visual reference, commercial trawlers were snagging nets and losing gear over the shell mounds. The commission, in consultation with the fishing community, directed Chevron to place marker buoys over the mound sites, settle claims, and work to find a permanent solution to resolve ongoing conflicts. In 1999, the commission held a hearing on the issue, which elicited numerous ideas on how to resolve fisheries conflict, including full mound removal, leaving the mounds in place but funding habitat restoration, compensation to fishermen to support the purchase of improved navigation equipment, and various other alternatives. The commission directed a feasibility analysis be prepared that assessed potential impacts of leaving the mounds in place versus removal and for Chevron to maintain marker buoys and its claim process. Next slide, please. In 2001, the commission further directed Chevron to submit a range of feasible options to resolve the fisheries conflict. Based off that, staff developed an environmental impact report with 7 options, ranging from full removal to variations of leaving all or most of the mounds in place with mitigation. The draft EIR received incredible interest with over 600 public comments, many concerning preferences on alternatives and the need for more testing at the shell mound site. In 2009, a recirculated draft EIR was developed with slightly modified alternatives and additional science included. That EIR, along with the overall approach, stalled due to ongoing concerns by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and water quality agencies that removal of any mounds by dredging would introduce contaminants into the ocean water column that would otherwise remain tombed in place. Next slide, please. In 2013, Chevron negotiated and executed an agreement with commercial trawlers that compensated each for installing new navigation equipment, prior losses caused by the shell mounds, and any future loss of fishing over the shell mound site. As a result of the agreement, commission staff allowed Chevron to remove marker buoys in place since 1998. In the 12 years since the agreement went into place, staff have not been made aware of any conflict or claims by commercial trawlers caused by the shell mound sites. In 2021, Chevron applied to the commission to leave the shell mounds in place and quit claim its oil and gas leases based on the principle that the 2013 trawler agreements meet the purpose and spirit of the original project stipulation that the shell mounds not conflict with commercial trawling and provide benefit to that industry. To inform the commission on remaining concerns with leaving the mounds in place, staff undertook preparation of a report to assess the potential risks and impacts to public trust resources from leaving the shell mounds in place. With that, I'm going to pass it off to Nicole.
Good afternoon, commissioners.
Good afternoon.
On March 3rd, commission staff released the report, Review of Lease Obligations and Assessment of Impacts to Public Trust Resources and Values, hereafter referred to as the assessment. for state oil and gas leases PRC 1824 and 3150, and including the final disposition of the 4-H shell mounts. The assessment provides transparency to stakeholders, tribal nations, and decision makers as to the staff's analysis of potential impacts associated with leaving the shell mounds in place. Next slide, please. Oh, next slide after that. There we go. In preparation of the assessment, Commission staff worked with our consultant, Dudek, to compile relevant scientific literature and data from 23 studies performed over a 40-year period at the shell mounds. These studies examined all facets of the physical, chemical, and biological composition of the mounds and the overlying water column. Remotely operated vehicle, or ROV, surveys took video and still photos of the mounds, and geophysical survey equipment was used to map the mounds. Next slide, please. To ensure the integrity of the analysis, Commission staff asked the Ocean Science Trust to coordinate an independent scientific peer review of the draft report. OST coordinated with several scientists with expertise in marine biology, geology and geophysics, and marine toxicology to review the draft report and provide input and suggestions for improvement. In response to the peer review, staff conducted additional studies to examine the potential for bioaccumulation of toxins in the tissue of living organisms present around the mounds. Additionally, staff bolstered some of the analyses through the addition of supporting information and evidence. A summary of the peer review is available on OST's website. Next slide, please. The assessment found that the mounds are physically stable. The accumulated sediments and shell hash in the outer layers of the mounds entomb any remnant contaminants from prior oil and gas operations. And those remnant contaminants are not dispersing into the water column, as demonstrated by recent studies that examined contaminant concentrations in aquatic life at the shell mounds. Next slide, please. Of particular focus in the assessment is the potential for medium to large magnitude seismic events to impact the stability and integrity of the mounds. At this time, there has been no change to the topography of the mounds since the platforms were removed in 1996. However, modeling studies have shown that strong earthquake activity near the mounds could cause localized slope failures and contaminant release into the water column. Next slide, please. For comparison purposes, the assessment also includes a preliminary analysis of impacts that would be associated with removal of the mounds. Removing the shell mounds would require dredging and disposal of the spoils at an offshore or onshore location. The vessel activities associated with dredging and disturbance of the mounds would likely result in impacts to water quality, including release of contaminants into the water column, marine species and biological resources, air quality, including production of greenhouse gas emissions, disturbance to commercial fishing activities in the region, temporary impacts to vessel traffic and navigation, and likely impacts to port adjacent as disadvantaged communities due to vessel and truck activities associated with disposal of dredged materials. A full analysis under CEQA would be required. Next slide, please. This slide depicts potential impacts to sediments and particulate matter in the mounds due to dredging activities versus seismic activity. Dredging activity to remove the mounds would create significant sediment and contaminant plumes at all four mounds during disposal activities, whereas strong seismic activity would likely not affect all mounds in the same way, and impact intensity would be dependent on proximity of each mound to the epicenter of the quake. Further, sediment and particulates mobilized by an earthquake would likely settle out more quickly and within closer proximity to the existing mounds than via dredging activities. Next slide, please. As a reminder, there is no action for the Commission to take at this time regarding the assessment. This presentation was made to the Commission to provide an overview of the assessment and an opportunity for the public to provide comment. Staff will continue to accept comments on the assessment through April 30th at the email address shown on the screen. Staff will subsequently compile the comments and summarize them for the Commission and agendize a lease termination agreement for Commission consideration at a later date. The results of the assessment will inform staff's discussions with Chevron regarding the content of any final agreement. Next slide, please. This concludes staff's presentation. We are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nicole and Joe. Michelle, do we have anyone who would like any public comment related to this item?
Yes, our first public commenter will be Tom Taftakin.
How many public comments, how many people do we have signed up?
Currently, we have 3 signed up.
Okay, go ahead, proceed, please. Hello.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Tom Rafting with the Sport Fishing Conservancy. It's a very comprehensive report. We took a look at it, went through it, and I think we're very much in favor and support the, not stated, but the actual outcomes of this. You have 2 courses of action. One, the removal of the mounds. The removal of rounds guarantee that there's going to be sediment and a number of foreign bodies put in the ocean. It's going to happen. It's definite, and that's not even dealing with the disposal of it. The other side of that is the potential of a possible earthquake down the line, and you know there is a cause of that. I think that slide was really telling. That an earthquake is a rather sudden thing, maybe minutes. You may have some dispersal, but it's not going to last very long, all right? We have certainty on one side. We have an outside possibility of contamination on the other side, and it's really pretty clear to us. We fish recreationally. The impacts on this would be the same recreationally or commercially. And I just want to say something. The mounds basically are hard bottom, hard strata there right now. Over 95% of the Southern California bight is soft strata. The mounds actually are a net benefit to fishing. Why did the trawlers lose gear there? Because they were fishing there specifically because that's where the fish were. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for coming. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Asia Hudson. In addition, if Linda Kropp is on Zoom, please raise your hand so we can identify you for your comment on this item in the future.
Hello, welcome.
Hello. So I am Asia Hudson. I'm the Marine Conservation Analyst and Program Manager with the Environmental Defense Center. Good afternoon, Commissioners. So you will be hearing from 2 of my co-workers, but just want to say thank you from EDC for holding this public hearing, and we appreciate you providing this opportunity to hear from us. I, along with the others on my team, are in the process of completing our review of the report and have concerns with the habitat value attributed to the mounds, the toxic materials still present at the mounds, and the geohazards that are a threat to the mound stability. One example comes from my review of the 2025 report that asserts that species utilizing the mounds represented by muscle test subjects, despite being found to hold some of the toxic chemicals in their tissue, referring to the 2003, 2006, and 2023 studies, that they're healthy. My evaluation of a 2025 study by Sisma Ventura et al. Has led me to have a few questions. Why were the studies conducted in 2003, 2006, and 2023 for short durations? I believe it was only for 2 months. At the very least.
Can we ask you, the translator, translation team has asked you to slow down a little bit.
At the very least, they should have happened over a year to see the effect of seasonal oceanographic changes on contaminant exposures. Why, with toxic chemicals like barium, alkylated naphthalene?
I'm sorry, that's not slow enough.
That's not slow enough, okay. That is now outside of my comfort zone a little bit. And PAHs found in the tissue were the muscles then claimed to be healthy. Was the level of contaminants found not high enough to have a negative impact? Would the presence of those chemicals over the long term affect the ability for the individuals to reproduce effectively and or produce quality offspring? If it decreases offspring success, how would that impact the local population? What are the mitigation measures for this type of impact? Another area of concern applies to the process listed in the 2025 report, particularly Appendix B, the explanation of the likely process and equipment used to conduct a full removal of the mounds excludes the usage of a suction device, which was identified in the 2003 draft EIR. In that 2003 report, it recommended a suction device to achieve precision removal of sediments around cations or large debris where conventional dredging equipment cannot be operated, in conjunction with the clamshell bucket dredge and gorilla net. What device will be used to achieve precision removal in 2025? Why was this additional method omitted from the Appendix B analysis? And to what extent would the addition of a precision removal pump reduce impacts during mound removal? Thank you for your consideration of our initial comments. We are continuing to evaluate the report and are waiting for a complete analysis of alternatives from the commission. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker.
Our next speaker is Tara Rengifo.
In person or on Zoom?
On Zoom.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. Good afternoon. My name is Tara Renhifo, and I am a senior attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. My testimony will focus on the requirements for CEQA review. The express terms of the leases governing the 4-H platforms required Chevron to remove any and all equipment and facilities upon termination of the leases, as directed by the state, and otherwise restore the premises. Likewise, the leases prohibit pollution and contamination of the ocean and interference with bathing, fishing, or navigation. Chevron sought to fulfill its lease termination obligations through the 1994 Abandonment and Removal Plan. The 94 MND prepared for the plan required that verification of site clearance will be performed as part of the final debris recovery operation, and the debris located will be recovered by divers to complete the site clearance verification. Notably, the MND found that the proposed project will remove man-made structures and restore the marine environment to its natural state. Consistent with the MND, the mitigation monitoring program required removal of debris and verification of site clearance. The commission approved the plan on the condition that upon completion of abandonment, the platform's sites would be trawlable. Additionally, the commission authorized staff to take all actions necessary to implement the project. Chevron now claims it is infeasible to make the shell mounds trawlable for commercial fishing activity, but that the trawler compensation agreement satisfied this mitigation measure. Whether mitigation is infeasible is a determination for the agency to make, not Chevron. The January 2025 report describes the trawl test measure as, quote, an outstanding stipulation from SLC's approval of the project. We agree. If the commission intends to change or remove this mitigation measure, the agency must demonstrate infeasibility, and a supplemental EIR would also be required by CEQA. It is well established that if an agency seeks to change or delete a CEQA mitigation measure, the agency must demonstrate feasibility. Such a determination triggers the requirement for supplemental environmental review under CEQA and must be supported by substantial evidence. Chevron cannot be released from its obligations to comply with earlier mitigation measures unless and until a supplemental EIR is prepared and circulated pursuant to CEQA. Thank you for your consideration of our initial comments. We are continuing to evaluate the report and the commission's obligations under CEQA.
Thank you very much. Michelle, do we have any other speakers?
Yes, our next speaker is Garrett Katata.
Please proceed.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me? We can hear you.
Okay, great. Well, I actually had my hand raised for a previous question that I had for someone of the previous speakers. Is it possible that I could ask that question still, or do I have to focus on the current case?
If you could please come back during the second public comment period.
Okay. Sure, I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. Michelle, any other speakers on this item?
We have no other hands raised for comment at this time.
I know that Linda Kropp, one of my associates, wanted to speak on this item and has yet not.
Yes, we do have her signed up, but she did not. We were not able to identify her on Zoom.
Okay, commissioners, any questions or comments on this item? I have a question. Are these mounds growing in size every year?
No.
But they did grow. If they went from the original size to up to 24 feet of shell mounds.
Yeah, this was a product of the historic drilling, which there's some misinformation that was sort of shared just a minute ago. In the 70s, it was not actually illegal for offshore oil programs to overboard their muds and cuttings. So when they're drilling the wells, all that mud that they got, they were legally allowed to overboard. That changed actually in the late 70s. But the stuff that was done prior to that was consistent with California law. So the muds and cuttings under the original platforms in California are the beginning of the base, and that sits down on the floor. Then every single year, the platforms have to have be cleaned down to a certain depth of all crustacean and other life so that you can do structural assessments. Those, and there's also a huge number of various marine animals that live on the structure, that live and then die and fall, and that hash has built over 40 to 60 years in most of these cases, and that is what constitutes the shell mound. So it is not growing, but it was a deposition as a result of the placement of the platform and the cleaning that went on with the platform and also all of the animal life that was attached to the platform.
Okay, that's very important. All right. Yes, of course. Commissioner Pearl?
Just one other clarifying question. I appreciate the information around, this idea of removal and sort of the impact that could have versus not doing anything with the mounds at this moment, but, the potential for some sort of a seismic event. In the case of a seismic event, is there any obligation to Chevron to deal with any that might, any disruption that might result? I think that's important to know.
Really great question. Yes. And I think it's also, you're very intuitive. This particular first report doesn't address the next step, which is really what the application from Chevron is and what staff would be ultimately, I think, recommending would be what we would call a lease termination agreement. It's a lease allowance that would require Chevron to remain on board for a period of time and to also provide any, in the event of a seismic, any kind of seismic activity, to go out and do side scan sonars and evaluations of the mounds, and then also water quality assessments if there was a breach. So there would be a mechanism for a period of time after which then they would be, the lease would be over and they would be done. But what we're sort of highlighting, and I think what Nicole and Joe did a really good job on, is that from 1996 to present, so 30 years, the mounds have sat there with no impact, no significant impact. I mean, there's people will argue about the differences of the level of impact or, as we heard from EDC, the degree to which the various studies over the last three decades, have identified a limited or no impact assessment. So I think that that's correct, but what we were looking at as staff was a way to kind of continue this on so that there's a period of time that seems reasonable, and then if the commission is so inclined at that point to say, okay, there's clearly no oil and gas operations here, so we've got this issue of technically, Chevron owns production leases over these sites, but of course it hasn't been in production in 30 years, and there's this question that has been raised by the public about what did the MND require, what is a mitigation measure, what is not. We'll address more of that in future meetings, and also, ultimately what was the direction that the commission gave from the CEQA document to Chevron, and how was that ultimately resolved? So I think there's still some outstanding questions that we'll address, and hopefully we can do a better job of that with staff's coordination with commenters as well. So we'll work on that. And I just was given a heads up that Linda is available now. Linda Kropp is available.
All right. So, Michelle, why don't you go ahead and tee up Linda for her public comment?
Yes, our next speaker is Linda Kropp, and they will be joining us by Zoom.
Linda? Thank you. Sorry, I was having some technical challenges. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you. I'm Linda Kropp, Chief Counsel of the Environmental Defense Center, representing Get Oil Out, the Santa Barbara Ventura Chapter of the Sierra Club, and Citizens Planning Association. Thank you again for holding this hearing. Our first request is that you extend the deadline for comment on this report. The report is voluminous and contains several lengthy appendices that are material to the analysis. We have waited almost 30 years for this day, and we want to make sure we have time to conduct a thorough analysis and provide meaningful input. In fact, we have been working on this issue since 1996, when Chevron removed four platforms offshore Summerland and left mounds of contaminated debris on the seafloor. At the time, Chevron told us that the mounds were free of any toxins and provided great habitat. We insisted that the commission conduct a study to verify these assertions. In 2001, the commission released the DeWitt report, which found that the mounds contained high levels of several metals and organics, including arsenic, cadmium, chromium, copper, lead, nickel, PAHs, and PCBs. The report also determined that the habitat value of the mounds had substantially decreased over the past few years and was, quote, relatively low. We have waited nearly 30 years for this debris to be cleaned up and the area restored to its natural condition. We have also been waiting for a complete environmental review that analyzes the impacts and alternatives for leaving the mounds in place. In 2003, the commission prepared a draft environmental impact report that analyzed 10 alternatives for removing the mounds, as well as five alternatives that left all or some of the mounds in place. That EIR, however, was not finalized. In 2013, the commission published a notice of preparation of another EIR, which also would have analyzed removal options, but that process was terminated. We are still waiting for a complete analysis of alternatives, including removal alternatives, so that the commission can properly evaluate its options and select the one that is best for the marine environment. We also seek full analysis of mitigation measures for removal of the mounds. For example, the report indicates impacts related to air emissions and greenhouse gas emissions, but these can be mitigated. So we really need to see a full environmental review with ample time for public review and comment. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other speakers?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Very good. This was an informational item, no vote required, so we will move on to item 51. Item 51 is a presentation by staff to consider amendment of lease 4196 for the Ormond Beach Generating Plant near Oxnard in Ventura County. May we have the staff presentation, please?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Kelly Connor with the Commission's Land Management Division. And I'm here to present on item 51, consideration of a lease amendment for offshore conduits used by Ormond Beach Generating Station. The existing lease will expire on April 23rd, 2025, and the lessee has applied for an amendment to extend the lease until December 31st, 2026, to coincide with contractual commitments with the California Department of Water Resources to provide emergency power. This presentation will provide a summary of the background and context for staff's recommendations. Additional information is available in the staff report. Next slide, please. The existing lease is for two 14-foot diameter conduits on sovereign land in the Pacific Ocean, located near Oxnard in Ventura County. The Upland Ormond Beach Generating Station, or OBGS, which falls outside the Commission's jurisdiction, is visible in the aerial image on the left, and the lease premises for the conduits offshore are shown on the right. Next slide, please. The OBGS is a natural gas-fired steam electric generating facility built in 1968. The power plant consists of two conventional steam turbine units and provides power to the Southern California region. The cooling system for OBGS utilizes a once-through cooling system where seawater is drawn in and discharged through two conduits extending into the Pacific Ocean. These conduits are the improvements under lease with the Commission. Once-through cooling is an older technology that was used in many older gas-powered power plants. It has many negative environmental impacts, including impingement and entrainment. In 2010, the California State Water Resources Control Board adopted a once-through cooling policy to phase out this harmful technology in coastal power plants by the end of 2020. As part of the once-through cooling policy, the State Water Board created the Statewide Advisory Committee on Cooling Water Intake Structures, or SACWIS, to advise them on the implementation of the once-through cooling policy and ensure that retiring this technology did not unintentionally cause serious disruption to the state's electrical power supply. SACWIS includes representatives from the California Energy Commission, California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, California Coastal Commission, the State Lands Commission, California Air Resources Board, the California Independent System Operator, CAISO, and the State Water Board. In 2018, the lessee submitted letters to the CPUC and CAISO stating its intent to retire the OBGS by the once-through cooling policy compliance date of December 31st, 2020. The OBGS was initially required to comply with the once-through cooling policy by either upgrading or shutting down by December 31st, 2020. However, a local capacity requirement study from CAISO analyzed whether there was sufficient energy capacity to meet statewide energy demands and found that OBGS was needed for local energy capacity reserves. The CPUC directed Southern California Edison to negotiate contracts with the facilities to maintain grid reliability. SoCal Edison negotiated a series of power purchase agreements that kept OBGS open through December 31st, 2023, all of which were approved by the CPUC. After SACWIS's recommendation, the Water Board also extended OBGS's once-through cooling compliance deadline until the end of 2023. Next slide, please. The CEC conducted a new energy grid reliability analysis in May of 2022. The new analysis considered impacts such as extreme weather events, wildfires, and supply chain constraints. This analysis projected a potential shortfall of up to 10,000 megawatts in summer of 2025. In response, the state legislature adopted and the governor signed AB 205, which created the Strategic Reliability Reserve to bolster system reliability while the state procures clean energy resources. A portion of the Strategic Reliability Reserve, SRR, includes the Electricity Supply Strategic Reliability Reserve Program, which is administered by the Department of Water Resources, and authorizes it to contract with and extend the operations of power plants scheduled for retirement. DWR prepared and presented its Strategic Reliability Reserve Investment Plan to the Energy Commission, which included a contract with OBGS to operate as an emergency plant from December 31, 2023 to December 31, 2026. The Energy Commission approved DWR's plan in August of 2023. Subsequently, the Water Board extended the once-through cooling policy compliance date again for OBGS to the end of 2026, to coincide with OBGS operating as part of the state's Strategic Reliability Reserve Program. As a result, OBGS does not operate on a regular basis. It is activated only if all other power sources are unable to meet emergency demands as required under their DWR contract. CAISO, the independent entity, determines whether OBGS should be activated to provide emergency power by reviewing energy demands and grid reliability. The result is that OBGS is now rarely used. In 2024, OBGS was turned on only three times in the summer when extreme heat forecasts risked blackout energy blackouts. It was operational for several days during each occurrence. Next slide, please. On March 21st, 2025, SACWIS approved its 2025 report, which does not recommend any extensions to the use of OBGS beyond the current December 31st, 2026 deadline for it to shut down. SACWIS continues to assess reliability impacts on the electrical grid and release its 2026 recommendations around March 2026. Next slide, please. In connection with its operation extensions, GenOn and the City of Oxnard established deadlines and a financial plan for the demolition and removal of OBGS, which is funded by GenOn with a $25 million deposit held in a trust fund administered by a local nonprofit entity. GenOn also paid $10 million to the city's dedicated fund for the development of a future public access park at the OBGS site. GenOn and the city continue to meet to plan decommissioning and future use of the site, which includes transferring the upland property to the city after decommissioning and carrying out the environmental cleanup. Next slide, please. As part of the application process, staff reviewed the existing lease and conducted environmental justice outreach to gather community input on the proposed ongoing use of OBGS. Additionally, staff evaluated various quantitative sources of information for the City of Oxnard, where Ormond Beach Generating Station is located. This environmental justice analysis is detailed in the staff report. On February 28, 2025, as part of the Commission's ongoing commitment to foster meaningful involvement and to increase outreach consistent with environmental justice policy, the Commission staff held a hybrid community engagement meeting at the South Oxnard Community Center. Approximately 45 community members attended in person, and around 25 joined via Zoom. The purpose of the meeting was to inform the community about the proposed lease amendment and to provide an opportunity for community members to offer input. As indicated in the staff report, the community requested the denial of the extension of the lease. Next slide, please. The application before the Commission proposes extending authorization for the offshore conduits necessary for an energy power plant that the state has determined is required to ensure power grid reliability during extreme events. This plant is operating under a contract with the state's DWR until December 31st, 2026. The lessee is currently planning and funding for the eventual decommissioning once the existing contract with DWR concludes at the end of 2026. The lessee has funded deposits to cover the decommissioning of the facility and for public areas and public access. Additionally, staff's recommendation is to require the lessee to submit an application for the removal or other disposition of the improvements under lease. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Commission authorize the amendment of lease number 4196, a general lease industrial use, to extend the lease term to December 31st, 2026, increase the bond or other security to $14,400,000, and to require the lessee to submit a lease application by December 31st, 2025, for the removal or other disposition of all existing offshore improvements related to the OBGS. Next slide, please. Thank you. Staff and the lessee are available to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, I understand we have quite a few people who want to speak on this item. Michelle, how many folks do we have signed up so far?
We currently have 22.
22. All right. So what I would like to do with that large number, Grace, is let's have for the first 30 minutes, we'll go ahead and let people have the first 3 minutes. Second 30 minutes, we'll let people have 2 minutes. And then we'll see what we do after that. Okay, does that sound like a reasonable way to go ahead and go forward?
Of course, Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
And then GenOn is here to make a presentation as well.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
GenOn? Thank you.
Good afternoon. I apologize. Some of this may be a little redundant with what you just heard. So.
Your full name,
yes,
for the
my
record?
My name is Eric Watts. I'm the CEO of GenOn. We're the parent of Ormond Beach Generating Station in Oxnard. So I'm here today to support extending the lease so that we can continue to meet our commitments to the Strategic Reserve and to the DWR as long as the plant is needed. The lease is solely for the seafloor area, which the coolant conduits are under, and not for any other part of the plant. As a little background, as you heard, a couple of years ago, several state energy agencies determined that Ormond Beach's continued operations were necessary to ensure the power grid reliability, especially during extreme events like high load from heat or fire like recently. And so, you know, the Strategic Reserve was established for that by the legislature to protect against blackouts in those events, and only operates during those events now versus in the past when it's run for commercial purposes. So in the past, we had commercial contracts where we were required to bid the plant in. That is no longer the case. We're only dispatched in those emergencies. Further, Ormond Beach has all our environmental permits in place necessary to continue operating the plant through the end of 2026. And as you can imagine, given that the CAISO only dispatches the plant in emergencies, the emissions profile of the plant has changed dramatically over the years.
I'm sorry, can you tell me when the biggest change took place, and so how many hours generally you're online, whatever
sure.
you're quantifying?
Sure, so the biggest change was with this last extension and with this contract with the Department of Water Resources. So it changed the entire profile.
Wait, when
of the
when was that?
That was January 1 of 2024.
Okay.
So 18 months ago.
18 months ago,
yeah.
Okay.
Because prior to that, it was a commercial capacity resource for the system. So we were required at that point to offer the plant every single day, which now we have no control over that, no requirement to do so. We're actually technically in an environmental outage unless the CAISO, the California Independent System Operator, determines that there's an emergency need, releases us from that, and asks us to come online. So they'll ask us to come on to our minimums, and they use us as sort of a break glass and emergency option. If they feel like there's going to be a blackout, then they'll turn us out.
So can you give us roughly pre-January 2024 to today what the percentage reduction in the number in the amount of usage or your hours?
I don't know that I can give you the hours because I certainly don't remember them, but let me put it in a different way for you that will tell
sure.
you the same story.
Mm-hmm.
That the emissions from the plant, the CO2, the NOx emissions, have been reduced by I think something like 90% from 2020 through 2024,
okay.
which is evidenced by the number of hours we're running. Back in 2020, we had some issues in August, I think, where there were some near blackouts, and the plant was running a lot, like mm-hmm. it had before that. And now, I think Kelly said it was only dispatched three times last year. And when it's dispatched, that doesn't necessarily mean it's like running full out. It means the CAISO brings it up to its minimum load, and then they decide whether they need you. So running doesn't always mean 1,500 megawatts, it could mean 50 megawatts, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I could get back to you or get with Kelly and give you the number of hours.
No, that's okay.
Run.
That was helpful.
Yeah. And then he also mentioned the impingement and entrainment, which is clearly an impact of having the once-through cooling technology. But I think the number is something like, I think the public data from October 22 through September 23 that year, there was 1.3 pounds of fish that were impinged in the screens. And then Kelly also mentioned the agreements and the relationship we have with the city of Oxnard. Back when we were asked to run or continue to run the first time, we worked with the city knowing that eventually the useful life of the plant would be over and that the community wanted the land and get rid of the power plant. So we put aside that $25 million, which I think is now something like $27 million, to demolish the plant and remediate the site down to its sort of natural state. And then as part of that, I don't think he mentioned this, there are risers that come up from the seafloor, from the conduits that are out in the ocean. Those will be removed down to the seafloor and taken off. So there will be no structure above the seabed after that's done.
Okay, and then the lease term for this item before state lands is until?
The current one expires this month, and the amendment to extend it through 12/31/26.
And then is that consistent with the leases that you have for the other elements of the power plant?
Our other permits, yes. Our other permits are active through the end of this contract.
Okay. Can you give me that date again?
12/31 of 26. That's when the contract with the DWR expires.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
We may have more questions for you from other commissioners, but first, Michelle, why don't we turn to public comment?
Yes, our first speaker is Eric Watts. Following Eric will be Joan Thorpe. Eric, please make your way to the podium. Oh, sorry, so sorry. Then our next speaker will be Joan Thorpe. Following Joan will be Juan Lores.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, staff. My name is Joan Thorpe. I'm a resident of Fort Wainimi, and I'm here today on behalf of Surfrider Foundation Ventura County. The Surfrider Foundation's mission is to protect the world's oceans, waves, and beaches for the enjoyment of all people. Oxnard residents deserve safe access to a healthy Ormond Beach, which is why I'm urging you to reject an extension to lease 4196 for seawater intake and discharge conduits for the Ormond Beach Generating Station. I have worked, played, and volunteered on Ormond Beach for over 30 years and have witnessed the past industrial degradation of Ormond Beach and the wetlands, the present barrier to access, and the pollution from the generating station, as well as the current efforts from the community, nonprofits, and government entities to restore this important wetlands area. Community members in Oxnard have been fighting for years for clean air and coastal access, and rejecting the lease would honor the commission's goal to minimize additional burdens on and increase benefits to marginalized and disadvantaged communities like South Oxnard, as outlined in the Commission's environmental justice policy. It is the State Lands Commission's job to secure and safeguard the public's access rights to navigable waterways and the coastline, especially for vulnerable communities that have traditionally not been able to enjoy them. Surfrider opposes once-through cooling systems like OBGS, as they are known to harm marine ecosystems by exposing them to thermal and physical stress. Again, it is critical that you reject the amendment for lease 4196 that would extend the lease from April 23rd, 2025 to December 31st, 2026. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Juan Lores. Following Juan will be Fabiola Gomez.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your time. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Juan Laditz, project director with the Central Coast Climate Justice Network and a Ventura County resident. I'm here to urge you to reject the lease extension for the seawater conduits at the Ormond Beach Generating Station. For years, Oxnard residents have fought to retire this plant. In 2023, over 1,000 community members signed a petition and dozens attended meetings urging action. At the time, the state extended contracts at a cost of $1.2 billion to California taxpayers and continued pollution in an already overburdened community. Now with the conduit lease set to expire, the commission has a real opportunity to close the chapter on old polluting ways, opening the path towards a just energy transition rooted in resilience and equitable benefit. Rejecting this lease extension would help ensure timely retirement of the Ormond Beach Generating Station by its scheduled 2026 date, while helping the commission to honor your environmental justice policy, reducing harm to communities such as those in Oxnard. This plant has proven itself unreliable, failing during the 2022 heat wave. Its benefits, debatable. Its human and environmental health impact are measurable. Simply put, idling plants pollute. I ask you to ensure timely retirement of the conduit by rejecting this lease extension. Again, thank you. Begin the restoration of Ormond Beach to a safe, clean, and accessible section of coastline for Oxnard and California residents. This is an opportunity to shift a region of detriment to one of benefit. This can be step one towards a healthier tomorrow and help push our great state to aggressively pursue renewable energy generation and storage. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for coming. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Yes, our next speaker is Fabiola Gomez. Following Fabiola, we have Aurora Ruggiero.
Good afternoon. My name is Fabiola Gomez. I am a resident of Ventura County, and I urge you not to extend your contract lease. Oxnard residents are burdened with numerous toxic sites in our cities, neighborhoods, and beaches, ranging from Superfund sites to greenhouse gas emission vehicles to this unreliable grid. I had the opportunity to attend a toxic tour of the city led by community members. And even with the amount of time we spent touring this city, we still couldn't fully explore every issue in depth because there were so many. This gas plant promises Ventura County residents support during extreme weather conditions, but it has failed us multiple times. One example is Fillmore residents were out of electricity for 3 days this year. Gas infrastructure is polluting the air, water, and land with cumulative effects that are worsening the health and livelihoods of already marginalized groups and our fragile ecosystem, all while failing to live up to its promise. With more extreme weather events likely in the future, driven by continued fossil fuel use, gas is not the key to grid reliability. States must proactively plan for alternatives. Gas plants contribute to the climate crisis by releasing heat-trapping emissions, but they also emit nitrogen oxide, which contribute to smog and other pollutants. Nitrogen oxide emissions primarily affect local communities, leading to severe health issues such as respiratory and cardiovascular diseases, as well as premature death. This cumulative impacts of these emissions on nearby residents can be and are devastating. Our over-reliance on gas has led to grid reliability issues and has disproportionately impacted vulnerable communities. By prioritizing a just transition to clean electricity, we can accelerate the phase out of gas and create a more reliable and equitable grid for everyone. Rejecting this lease at least gives us hope that California will finally decide to shut down this unreliable gas plant and invest in a healthier energy. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Aurora Ruggiero. Following Aurora will be Angeles Garcia.
Hello, my name is Aurora. I am an Oxnard resident and a policy advocate with the Central Coast Alliance for a Sustainable Economy. I am grateful that the decision-making meeting is happening here in Oxnard, but I would want to take the time to recognize that there are still some community members who are unable to attend due to the meeting falling during traditional work hours. I also want to acknowledge and shout out Oxnard youth leaders who are here today, advocating for their community and the future they envision. They do not want to see a toxic soup that they call home. Additionally, I appreciate that the commission staff report recommends adding $13.4 million for the decommissioning cost of the conduits. It is clear that our community wants to see this power plant retire. We want safe access to our coast, and we want clean air. But the reality is that during one of the worst heat waves recorded, the summer of 2022, the Ormond Beach Power Plant had one of the highest curtailments compared to other OTCs in the state of California. The Ormond Beach Power Plant had a reduction in output below what it's expected to produce. My question is, why continue to vote in favor of technology that is unreliable and instead sacrifices the health and well-being of my community? The staff report recognizes Oxnard as a prototypical example of an environmental justice community. Today, the commission has the opportunity and the power to start an early process of retiring the conduits, ensuring that the Ormond Beach Power Plant does not face yet another extension by the state like we saw back in 2020 and in 2023. Our city is ready for this power plant to retire, with $25 million set aside to cover decommissioning costs, now sitting at $27 million, and $10 million for a coastal access park. Again, I ask commissioners today to vote in favor of coastal access and clean air for Oxnard residents from my community by rejecting the lease extension for the Ormond Beach Power Plant pipes. And I ask you to join our call to see this power plant retire in time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Angeles Garcia. Following Angela, we have Fatima Agredano.
Hello, good afternoon. It's past 12. My name is Angeles, and I'm 17. I've lived in Oxnard, specifically South Oxnard, my entire life. And since my freshman year in high school, I've been volunteering with CAUSE and learning more about the city that I live in. I love the place. I grew up here. I love the panaderia on every corner. I love the laundromat. It's definitely a nice community. But as I grew up and I started traveling outside of Oxnard, outside of the city, outside of the county, the state, I noticed that there's a difference between Oxnard and other places. The reason why Oxnard is dirty is not because of its people or any other reason. It's because of the industries that inhabit this place. These industries have been here for a while, and they're a testament that for a long time, people have placed importance on temporary money, temporary success over the people that inhabit the area, the wildlife, the marine life, the ocean. And I'm here to urge you to reject the lease. If you continue and renew this lease, the conduits, which you have already heard, kill marine life, and the power plant that pollutes the air will continue to do so, and it will be the last thing standing. My kids, my grandchildren will be left to deal with what this generation has done and the past generations. Again, please reject the lease and place, for once, place the importance on people and the earth over money. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Fatima Agredano. Following Fatima, we have Jocelyn Lucas and Annalie Harvey.
Good afternoon, Commission staff. My name is Fatima Agredano, and I am a student at Oxnard College and a leader with CAUSE. I have lived in South Oxnard, for 20 years, basically, all my life. And here to ask you to reject the lease, please ensure that OBGS shuts down and it's cleaned up. I know people who work on decommissioning the Ormond Beach generating station for decades. No change or progress, only broken promises. I started working in September of last year with CAUSE and learn more. For my whole life, I thought OBGS was a lighthouse or watchtower. I never knew it was a power plant that dumps hot water into oceans, kills ecosystems, limits our beach access, and emits sulfur dioxide, ammonia, carbon monoxide into the air. Not only that, but I live a short 5 to 10 minute drive and a 20-minute walk from Ormond Beach. Asthma rates in Oxnard sit at around 50%. My little brother has asthma. The type of chemicals released by the power plant make his asthma act up and puts his life at risk. My baby sister is a baby with underdeveloped lungs, breathing chemicals. She has no business being around. I can't sleep knowing there isn't something actively damaging the health of my family, even in small amounts. How can the commission be okay with this? By amending the lease, you are enabling the death of ecosystems, allowing tax dollars to impact our community's health. This is why I'm asking the commission directly to reject the lease amendment for power plant conduits to ensure a timely retirement of the Ormond Beach power plant and relieve Oxnard residents from the infrastructure that pollutes our air, stops us from safely accessing Ormond Beach, and prioritizing my life and my family's. Thank you.
Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Jocelyn Lucas and Annalie Harvey. Following them will be Savannah Tanner.
Hello, my name is Jocelyn Lucas. I am a student at Pacifica High School, and I have lived in Oxnard my entire life. We are here with friends to ask you to reject the lease for the power plant's pipes. The Ormond Beach plant has too many negative consequences to justify its existence, but because it sits in our immigrant working class community, it remains. Our community deserves clean air, clean water, and a clean future, but in Oxnard, that's never been the reality. Most people are unaware of the poor air they breathe every second. The power plant's water intake and discharge conduits kill marine life. They suck fish in and releases hot water back into the ocean. The power plant also hurts our community's health by emitting way more chemicals into the air than it should be and giving us asthma. Children grow up here with asthma rates higher than the state average. Some of them don't even know what it's like to breathe without wheezing. With 2 miles of the plant, there are more polluting industries that together create a toxic soup, as it states in the staff report. Your decision is an ingredient in cutting our lives short. For us, this isn't just a prop, it's a necessity. Our ocean is polluted, our beaches are contaminated, our environment is sacrificed, also so industries can keep profiting off the backs of our health. This soup is being spoon-fed to our community without our knowledge or consent. This is what you're allowing to happen every permit, every lease renewal, every decision that puts profits over people. Today, you have a chance to start cleaning this up. We have gathered over 1,000 petition signatures, and I know that there are people in this room who have continued in this effort for almost half my lifetime, if not longer. If the cycle continues, the children of the people in this room will be left to deal with the negligence of the generations before. And if you renew this lease and enable the power plant to continue to endanger the surrounding wildlife and community, it will be the last thing standing. So please reject the lease. Thank you.
Michelle, next speaker, please.
Yes, our next speaker is Savannah Tanner. Following Savannah will be Elizabeth Ortiz.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor and Commissioners, for opening public comment for item 51. My name is Savannah Tanner. I'm a student at Oxnard College, and I just recently moved from the north side by the collection in Oxnard to the south side here. I have a direct view of the Ormond Beach Generating Station, and shortly after I moved here, I had the first asthma attack in 10 years of my life, where my lungs seized up and I nearly fainted, leading my doctor to prescribe me this inhaler. But also in my direct view are the beautiful strawberry fields that I live next to, grown by my local community. I emphasize the word community here. I felt a change in spirit when I moved. Instead of commercially oriented properties, there is a community of schools, small businesses, and interactions here are more personal and altruistic. We're more tight-knit. People really listen to each other and take the time instead of worrying about whether we're making enough money, although sometimes that does come at a price for us as people. But directly on the port, the opposite is the case, where companies such as Del Monte Produce, Glovis, Genon Holdings, and other shareholders there care about profit at the cost of disrupting and breaking apart family and marine lives with lifelong deadly health conditions. That, I find, is egregious demographically targeted neglect of our community, which I find highly disturbing. On February 28th of this year, we requested that the State's Land Commission consider the residents of Oxnard by arranging a local meeting outside of work and school hours to accommodate our need to provide for our families and study. We thank you for opening this meeting to us. However, at this time, we have missed school and work at the risk of penalties for missing class, such as deducted grades or missing vital wages to our livelihoods, to make our urgent request to you all. Unlike these corporations, now is your chance to prove your consideration to the families of Oxnard. The only percentage of pollution reduction we care about is 100%. We demand that you shut down the Ormond Beach generating plant by rejecting the amendment to lease 4196, allow it to expire, and continue to accommodate constant public participation in the demolition and remediation of the land. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Elizabeth Ortez. Following Elizabeth will be Anthony Saucedo.
So Elizabeth wants a little bit more time, but Anthony's ready.
Okay. Anthony, please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Anthony Saucedo. I am a student at Wainimi High School and a youth leader with CAUSE. I'm 17 years old, and I have lived in Oxnard my whole life. As a kid, I loved the beach, so I would often go to the beach, Wainimi Beach, and I would often see a big red cylinder thing in the far distance. And as a kid, I couldn't help but think about the Lorax because, you know, that's just a movie that was, like, circulated as a kid. So as I grew up and I started to learn more about the Ormond Beach Generating Station, I kept asking myself, like, you know, how bad can this possibly be, right? You know, like, what is this generating station? And the constant rationale that I keep hearing behind keeping this generating station on is, you know, energy reliability in the case of an emergency or something like that. But what does reliable mean to you guys? Is reliable breaking down 17 times? Is reliable failing to produce sufficient energy standards? The truth is that this 55-year-old power plant is not reliable. It's just the technology from the 70s clearly is not up to standard with modern-day technology. And you cannot rely on something that is unreliable. There are many agencies that are deciding if this power plant should remain or not, but when you commissioners make this decision, I would ask you to please keep in mind and, like, be conscious. Do the people of Oxnard, do our community deserve to have, you know, these pollutants? This is one of the many pollutants in Oxnard. Does the marine life deserve to be targeted as one of the only wetlands left in, you know, California? These are things that are really important to us. So I just want you guys to keep that in mind, please. You know, what we want, you know, we don't want to see a power plant. We don't want pollutants, you know. We deserve clean air, too, like other people have clean air. So it is for that reason I urge you to please reject this lease amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Yuridiana De Miguel. Following Yuridiana will be Michelle Roretta.
Good afternoon, commission staff. My name is Yuridiana De Miguel. I am a senior at China Island High School, and I'm here with CAUSE today. I have lived in Oxnard for most of my life, and growing up, I believed I lived in the most beautiful part of it. Mm-hmm. My family and I would take evening walks, and I loved feeling the ocean breeze. But now as I'm older and I joined CAUSE, I realized the ugly reality that our community is surrounded by pollution, toxic waste, and a power plant that has been harming us for years. What we are living in is monstrous. I used to think every neighborhood had a power plant in their backyard until I learned that communities like mine are unfairly exposed to environmental hazards while others are not. I realized that our health, our air, our beaches weren't seen as important and treated as mere collateral damage, which is outrageous. Even though Oxnard has a coastline, we can't fully access it. There are only two entry points to Ormond Beach, Arnold Road and Perkins Road. We were told that these industries wouldn't stay, yet they continue to limit our access to our own beach. Like with OBGS, many residents don't even know what Holoco is because it has sat there, ignored for decades. But the reality is that we who live near toxic sites like these are exposed regardless of our knowledge. I've seen layers of smog covering the sky, and I've watched my loved ones suffer from asthma and other health issues. Industries can sit there, and when we raise our concerns about our exposure, it feels like we're silenced. Oxnard is not just a dumping ground, it is our home. Rejecting the lease amendment is a step toward environmental justice, public health protection, and restoring our community's rightful access to a clean and safe coastline. I urge the commission to stand with Oxnard residents and ensure the timely retirement of the Ormond Beach Power Plant. We deserve clean air, a safe coastline, and a fair decision-making process that truly includes our voices. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is Michelle Huerta. Following Michelle will be Odette Morin.
And Michelle, how many speakers do we have after this?
This is the 14th speaker, or sorry, the 13th speaker, okay. And I know we have 22 signed up.
22 more?
No, not 22 total.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Please proceed.
Hi. Nice to meet you guys. My name is Michelle. I'm 17, and I'm currently a senior at Channel Islands High School. Today, I'm going to urge you guys to reject the lease like my fellow peers. I have also grown up in Oxnard for the last 12 years of my life. Before here, I was actually the epitome of health. Until 2 years into living Oxnard, I developed asthma myself. And I actually ended up developing allergies. I don't know if that's a correlation to the lease, but it's important to note because when I would go to the beach closer to my house, which is 3 miles, I would experience a tightness in my chest, and I would instantly get a stuffy nose to the point where my parents thought it was better to take me home than actually continue my day at the beach. This made it completely unnecessary and annoying to my family that we had to go out of our way for the sake of our health. It's a nice beach. It's our home. And because of the power plant that resided in it, we had to go to another beach in Ventura, a prettier beach, a better beach, where my health effects weren't forced to act up. My father, I recall asking once what the factory or what it was, because I wasn't sure what it was, but I could see it in the distance whenever we'd visit the beach. My dad doesn't know a lot, but he did know that the air that we were breathing in from it causes respiratory issues, and it wasn't until I actually got into high school and found out about CAUSE where I learned the actual health risks it posed on us because of this power plant. California takes environmental protection very seriously, and Oxnard in itself also follows these laws like the Clean Air Act and the California Coastal Act, which aim to preserve our air quality and our coastal ecosystems. If we value our clean air and we value our environment, why do we still have this factory? We've been trying to get rid of it for years. It's arrogating that our voices we bring upon you guys. We hope that you listen, and we hope that you take our words with actual compassion as fellow humans. We urge that you reject this lease once and for all, because we don't want it. This is our community, this is our home, and we want our voices heard now. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle, next speaker.
Yes, we are going to go slightly out of order, just at their request. So our next speaker will be Juan Carlos Villagomez. Following Juan, we have Francis Molina.
Good afternoon, Commission staff. My name is Juan Carlos Villagomez. I am a 16-year-old student from Wainimi High School, and I am a leader with CAUSE. Oxnard is my childhood, my home, and the place that I've lived in my entire life. I know no other home besides it. Growing up in this part of the city, pollution and health issues seem one and the same. Everyone I knew and half of my family had either asthma, lung issues, or some form of health problems. It just seemed like another part of life, something that people from nearby cities could relate to. But after some family visited from out of state and commented on the bad situation, it occurred to me that that is not the truth. I soon then learned that the people of Oxnard, my home, are suffering all these issues due to the Ormond Beach power plant, a power plant that mainly doesn't even produce power for our city, but instead for cities like Camarillo and Thousand Oaks, while all the while still leaving our city polluted and contaminated. A power plant, like the name infers, sits on Ormond Beach, a beach that I knew little about growing up. Ormond Beach always seemed like a restricted area, a place that was dangerous, a place that was polluted, a place that no one, neither I nor the bravest man alive, should go to. But one day I visited the beach, and I realized that it was a beautiful place. Yet it was hidden. Its beauty was hidden due to the power plant. Its beauty is damaged, the ecosystem is damaged with the pollutants from the power plant. It poisons the land, it poisons the waters, and along with the pipes that draw in water, it kills the animals and creatures that are solely trying to live and survive in the only habitat that they know. For all these reasons, for all the suffering of not just us, your people, but the wildlife, my peers and I have come to you today as the people of Oxnard, our city, the city that elected you to lead and help us. We come to you to demand that you reject the lease and shut down the Ormond Beach power plant once and for all. We demand that you step up, help your people, and save our future of our home and community. To, for once, put life over money. Wish you a good day.
Next speaker.
Given what was outlined when we first started taking comment, do we wish to limit the comment period to 2 minutes?
I think we're close enough to the end. We can leave it as it is.
Okay. Our next speaker then is Francis Molina. Following Francis, we have Melissa Muniz.
It seems like the students have prepared 3 minutes worth of remarks, so I don't want them to have to edit on the fly.
We will be doing consecutive because a lot of the folks don't have a device, so we want to make sure that folks can understand what she will be sharing in Spanish.
We have a protocol to allow for translation. So go ahead and speak, and if you can pause for translation as you go, that will help move the process forward, and we'll recognize the change to the time as a result. Please start by stating your name.
Buenas tardes, comisión. Mi nombre es Francis Molina y soy residente de Port Hueneme.
Good afternoon, commission members. My name is Francis Molina and I am an Oxnard resident.
Hace tan solo 4 años me moví al sur de Oxnard.
Only 4 years ago I moved to Oxnard.
Pero tengo muy claro que el aire que está respirando mi familia no es adecuado.
But it is clear to me that the air that my family is breathing is not right.
Por eso les insto que rechacen el contrato de la planta generadora.
I urge you to please close down the plant.
Mi comunidad es predominantemente trabajadora y emigrantes.
My community is, for the most part, immigrant and workers.
Lo cual me llena de frustración que la reunión fue llevada a este tiempo.
Which fills me with frustration that the time of this meeting is now.
Porque toda mi comunidad está trabajando.
Because my entire community right now is working.
Muchos somos familias de bajos recursos.
Many of us are low income.
Lo cual enfrentamos una contaminación de casi el 94%.
For which we end up receiving 94% of pollution effects.
En diferencia de otros estados.
Versus other states.
Nosotros merecemos aire limpio y saludable.
We deserve clean and healthy air.
No deberíamos continuar siendo sacrificados en nombre de operaciones contaminantes y poco confiables.
We should not be sacrificed in the name of operations that continue to pollute. ¿En qué más? And not trustworthy operations.
Mucho de estas familias no tenemos dinero para llevar a nuestros familiares a hospitales o comprar medicamentos.
Many of our families do not make enough money to bring our families to the hospital and cover medication.
La comunidad de Oxnard ya enfrenta demasiadas fuentes de contaminación.
The city of Oxnard already receives so much pollution from different sources.
Como el tráfico de diésel en Port Hueneme.
Like the diesel traffic in Port Hueneme.
La fábrica de contenedores.
The container.
La planta de tratamiento de aguas residuales.
The wastewater plant.
Extender este contrato significa prolongar el sufrimiento de familias.
Extending this lease contract means extending the suffering of many families.
Que han luchado por años por un aire limpio y un futuro mejor.
Who have fought for many years for a better future and a cleaner, more healthy air.
Nuevamente les pido que rechacen el contrato.
I urge you to please reject the lease renewal.
Las comunidades afectadas deben tener la oportunidad de alzar su voz.
Affected communities must have a right to voice their concerns.
Y ser escuchados en decisiones que impactan nuestra salud, nuestra vida y nuestro entorno.
And be heard on issues that impact our life, our surroundings, and our health.
La decisión está en sus manos y la salud y la seguridad de nuestra comunidad depende de ustedes.
The decision is in your hands, and the health and the well-being of our community is in your hands.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Melissa Muniz. Following Melissa, we have Odette Morin.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Melissa Munoz. I was born and raised in Oxnard, and I am now a college student at Oxnard College with deep roots in this community. I am also a proud fellow with Climate First Replacing Oil and Gas in Ventura, and I would like to comment on the proposed lease amendment for the Ormond Beach Generating Station. I stand firmly with our residents in rejecting the proposed lease extension for the Ormond Beach Generating Station. Our community, already burdened by environmental injustices, has been forced to bear the disproportionate impacts of toxic emissions, poor air quality, and increased health risks for far too long. This facility has contributed to environment and public health crisis, and extending its operation would only deepen the harm. With that being said, I would also like to bring awareness to the issue of endangered species facing critical dangers with this generating station's operations, particularly in this extremely sensitive habitat. This power plant is situated near one of the last remaining wetlands in Southern California, threatening the delicate wildlife habitats and posing a greater threat to already endangered species, such as the unique snowy plover bird, the California least tern bird, and the tidewater goby fish. If these essential species were to disappear, our delicate ecosystems would be tarnished. It would be a disservice to the children, families, and future generations of this great city to be denied the opportunity of experiencing the beauty and knowledge that our unique ecosystems and coastal environments have to offer us. Furthermore, we need our representatives to advocate for the health and safety of our spaces in every aspect. These wildlife species, or these special wildlife species, need our attention now more than ever. Our beaches and surrounding communities need to be protected now more than ever. Our community deserves better, which is why I strongly urge you to reject this proposed lease amendment. Thank you.
Michelle?
Our next speaker is Odette Morin. Following Odette, we have Elma Del Aguilera.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Pleasure to meet you. My name is Odette Morin, and I have lived in the Oxnard-Port Hueneme area for most of my life. And now I have this great opportunity to work with young leaders that you've seen up to this point and here with cause, and here to ask you to please reject this lease and be our ally and make sure that all state agencies deciding on the Ormond Beach Generating Station prioritize our community's health and our beach access. Every single time I meet someone from our community, it warms my heart and to be able to connect with folks and ask, do you see that agency, that industry with the red and white stripes off in the distance? Did you smell that after school? It could be so many things in our community. Did you hear those loud noises at 3 a.m.? Did you wake up from those explosions? It could be the power plant. It could be the semi-trucks. There's so much. And in this connection, from this warmth in my heart, I really feel that sentiments drop to my gut as I really feel this impending sense of doom whenever we face this, that this is a reality. As many have named and is included in your staff report, we have many industries that pollute our neighborhoods and impact our health. Every young person you see here today asks for permission to skip school and represent Oxnard Voices today because we are all tired of being told industries are going to leave and be cleaned up, but then stay for decades more. And for this one, with millions of taxpayer dollars that continue to be poured into it without being used as often and crashing 17 times. Thank you for adding this large increase for the bond for in coming to Oxnard for your final decision. But the more that I listen and in this meeting, really sitting with the reality that there's so many industries that break their promises and continue to pollute, the more I listen, the more upset I get and the sense of doom. Can you guarantee that our lives will not be cut short for decades more? Can you make sure all agencies prioritize our health? We ask you to reject this lease because the water intake and discharge conduits enable this power plant to continue. Even in small amounts, it adds to our doomed reality. Just on a personal note, my family moved us here to Oxnard with the hope for a brighter future, as many folks who you have seen here today. For more education opportunities, for cleaner air, for waters not filled with waste. When I was small, I needed the surgery because I was born with small lungs and I couldn't breathe in the way that I was supposed to. My family was hopeful that Oxnard was my chance to survive. I do this for my health. I do this work for my family and for everyone more who lives here. So I'm here to ask you to please reject this lease, prioritize our health, do not enable yet another industry to cut our life short for decades more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Elma Del Aguilera. Following Elma, we have Lucas Zucker.
Hello. My name is Elma Del Aguilera. I am 26 years old and a lifelong resident of here in Oxnard. I'm also currently in the process of trying to purchase my first home here in the county. And just again, to explain a little bit more of how involved myself and my family has been in the environmental justice and the absolute disgrace that the levels of toxic waste we've had to deal with our entire lives. My mother, she currently works as a child nutrition worker in our local elementary school district. My older sister, also a resident of Oxnard, is currently a social worker here in the county of Ventura. The first time I showed up to council chambers, this room exactly, was in 2014 to speak towards the toxic harms that were falling on my community from this generating station.
every year since then, there has been constant attacks from these industries to continue these processes. And I see the failure of my state agencies in protecting my community. At the end of the day, state agencies such as the California Energy Commission, the Public Utilities Commissions, I was there when they came down to Oxnard and spoke, and I was there when ultimately their decisions led to today. And today I stand before you seeing that there is not an urgency to protect the harm that is happening to my residents. Instead, oh, no, the urgency is that, you know, Genon's contract is ending this month. What are we going to do since their contract, you know, the other one is ending by the end of 2026? The urgency I see is not about people. It's about contracts. It's about whatever loss in revenues and getting it to turn on 3 days out of the years, rather than the urgency of my community having to face these impacts on a daily basis. I do not see that there's any, you know, assurances that after you all make this decision today, there aren't going to be other agencies who continue this pattern of ignoring us, continue this pattern of saying, oh, we're only going to extend it 2 more years. Oh, we're only going to extend it till December 2026. It's just because it's an emergency. Where is the emergency that my fellow community members are being harmed? They have to pay extra, right, to have access to the beach. And by paying extra, I mean literally wasting gas, money, time to go have beach access in the city of Ventura, in the city of Santa Barbara, when we live less than 5 minutes away from our own coast, and there's not even a sidewalk to be able to access it. So please tell me how your decision today in any way is supporting our community. I say again, please reject this lease. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Lucas Zucker. Following Lucas, we have Yoslin Gomez.
Good afternoon. I'm Lucas Zucker, co-executive director at CAUSE. I want to welcome State Lands Commission back to Oxnard. Nearly 20 years ago, the commission took some courageous leadership to vote to stop the liquefied natural gas terminal that was proposed here in this community on environmental justice grounds. Because of this, I personally worked...
Thank you for acknowledging that.
Absolutely. I personally worked closely on the State Lands Commission's EJ policy. And I worked on it because these policies often live on paper, and they don't feel like they actually change the outcomes of agency decisions. But I believed because of that past decision that the State Lands Commission would make tough decisions for environmental justice. And I think if you see in the staff analysis before you, this is a textbook environmental justice case. I do want to clarify, you know, that the funds for cleanup that were mentioned in the analysis, they really shouldn't be seen as a gift to the community. Actually, the original operator, NRG, before it was spun off to be Genon, actually threatened this community, Oxnard, that if they opposed a fourth power plant being built here 10 years ago, they would leave their old plants to rust on the beach when they were forced to be retired by the state. And it was only when it was proposed to be extended that they offered those cleanup funds as a negotiation with the community. So I wanted to address a point here. A lot of folks have talked about the injustice that Oxnard faces, the environmental impact, and you may be feeling that this is absolutely an injustice, but it's out of your hands. And I wanted to tell you that the State Lands Commission has its own jurisdiction that's distinct from other agencies. The California Energy Commission, others, may have made the decision that they want the power from this power plant. But the State Lands Commission can decide whether it's appropriate to continue running these outfall conduits through state waters. Just as if the federal government leases land for offshore oil drilling, the State Lands Commission can decide whether those pipelines should be able to come to state waters and onshore. We all know the harmful environmental impacts to coastal ecosystems, to the community from plants like this. That is why all of these ocean cooling plants were proposed to be shut down in 2020 by the state. And we know that these type of impacts on our ocean, on our air, are very rare in more affluent communities, communities that demographically don't look like Oxnard, that aren't communities of immigrants and farmworker families. And I think it would send a very powerful message if the State Lands Commission said today, enough is enough. We are not going to wait any longer for endless extensions. We are going to stand up for environmental justice now. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Yaslyn Gomez, who will be joining us through Zoom. Following Yaslyn, we have Hannah Tsang.
Jocelyn Gomez is actually out of study hall and can no longer join through Zoom.
Our next speaker then will be Hannah Tsang. Following Hannah, we have Alex Mantanona. Sorry about that.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Hina Singh. I am a resident of Culver City, and I'm here today on behalf of the California Environmental Justice Alliance and the Regenerate California Coalition. Today, along with all of the incredible cause youth that you've already heard today, I'm urging you to reject the extension to lease 4196 for seawater intake and discharge conduits for the Ormond Beach Generating Station. The three main issues I want to highlight, we've already heard a couple of these in other comments. One is that the Ormond Beach's inability to function when it's needed, specifically during the summer 2022 heat wave, Ormond Beach plant failed to deliver the promised power, which was the reason that it had stayed online and had been extended many years in a row. The Regenerate California Coalition actually released a report about this called the Heat Wave Report that you can find on the CEJA website if you'd like to learn more about this. The second reason is, of course, the dangers of once-through cooling plants on marine ecosystems. We know that once-through cooling systems like OBGS are known to harm marine ecosystems by exposing them to thermal stress and physical stress. And we know that OBGS also sits near one of the last remaining wetlands in Southern California, threatening local habitats and ecosystems. The third point is that this was one of the first times that the commission was implementing the EJ policy that was developed by members of CEJA and CAUSE in partnership with the commission. And so in this first time of executing the EJ analysis, we found that there were a number of process issues. And I do want to highlight these because I think it's important that when something like this is being carried out for the first time, that it is done in the correct way and it's gone through due process. We found a number of meeting accessibility challenges during this process, including during the community engagement session, the inability for like almost 20 to 30 folks who had virtually joined the session were unable to provide their input and concerns. We found the shortening of the public comment period during the December commission meeting very jarring. Going back on an original commitment to share the EJ analysis before today's board meeting to allow time to really digest the material before having to provide comment. And then, as folks have already said, scheduling this meeting in the middle of working hours where many residents could not attend. So just in conclusion, this is not new. These community members, Oxnard has been fighting for years for clean air and coastal access, and we're really asking you that you reject the amendment today and make sure there are no further extensions for Ormond Beach. Thank you.
Thank you, Grace. I mean, sorry, Michelle.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Alex Mantanona. Following Alex, we will have Brooke Balthasar.
Hi. Thank you, commissioners and the committee for having us. My name is Alex Mantanona. I'm a resident of Oxnard, California. I just recently moved back about 6 months ago. I grew up there. And I originally left to pursue, my education, and I received a bachelor's in biochemistry and a master's and PhD in chemistry. And then I worked on environmental science afterwards. Currently, I'm working on the disaster relief and I'm calling in Los Angeles. And I'm calling in, in my brief little time that I have to going through this disaster zone and trying to clean up the incredible mess that's here. the reason I find it so important to call in now is because, as you've heard from the youth from today, as you've heard from the residents of Oxnard and the nonprofits that are working to protect our health, that we need to make sure that we are prioritizing people as we make our decisions. We make sure we prioritize our future of the children of the youth that you heard today as we make these decisions. And I understand that there is a hard calculus of, you know, keeping something online for emergency power. Yes, it's a break in case of emergency. But if you could see what I see every day, the destruction that is being caused and accelerated by climate change, and you understood the chemistry and physics behind it as I do, you would understand the need for haste in these decisions of restoring our natural lands, making sure our communities have natural resources that they can rely on, using all of our efforts and the resources that we're using to keep these power plants on to transition to a cleaner energy environment. Now, again, I understand that this is a really hard decision for you to make, but please put the importance of our residents' health and our ecosystems that we can begin to restore ahead of keeping this power plant on, which is only in use for 3 days out of the year and very little use. The quickness and the resources that we are wasting on keeping it open with this lease renewal could be used to move towards ecosystem restoration and restoring our habitat for our, you know, our residents. So thank you for your time, and I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Brooke Balthazar. Following Brooke, we have the phone number ending in 125.
And again, number of speakers left?
We have three.
Okay. All right. We're getting to winding this down, so we'll stick with the 3 minutes. And next speaker, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Brooke Balthazer, and I'm the community organizing manager at a local nonprofit called Seafrog, or Climate First, Replacing Oil and Gas. I'm also a South Oxnard resident who is deeply concerned with the proposed lease amendment for the Ormond Beach Generating Station. This is not the first time our community has shown up to fight against this toxic infrastructure, but I certainly hope it's the last. For too long, our vibrant community has been burdened with the chronic and toxic exposure to harmful industry pollution from multiple different sources. From port operations to diesel and freight transportation networks, to oil and gas operations to Superfund sites, the list goes on. You have the power to alleviate at least some of this burden, and I am here today urging you to take action. You have an opportunity to show our community that our state regulators can prioritize the health and well-being of our people rather than the wealth and profit of an industry that is in decline. In 2023, despite hearing from thousands of concerned community members, our state agencies broke their promises to uphold environmental justice principles by moving forward with a 2-year lease extension. The benefits of this decision were few and far between, but the cost? $1.2 billion taxpayer dollars. Our community did not ask for a lease extension, nor did we ask to foot the bill, but here we are. During the September 2022 heat wave, the Ormond Beach power plant was operating at full capacity, releasing an estimated 13 times more pollution than normal while failing to produce the electricity needed during peak demand hours. With this in mind, the motives of this proposed decision become clear. There is no reason to amend and extend this lease other than to squeeze the facility dry of any profit it has left. I would like to offer and propose an alternative solution. Reject this lease extension and instead work towards your decommissioning and remediation plans to make Ormond Beach a place for community to gather, play, and connect. Our community deserves access to our beautiful beaches and natural spaces, not the burden of a toxic power plant that is unable to serve its purpose. So with that being said, I urge you to reject this proposed lease amendment and to honor the lived experiences, concerns, and futures of the voices here today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is calling in from the number ending in 125. Following this commenter, we will have Julia Dowell.
please proceed. Why don't you read the phone number? Or at least, again, the last four digits.
Yes, the last three digits of the phone number is 125. It appears you are unmuted on our end.
Please proceed and state your name first. 125, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, so if you are on Zoom and your phone number ends in 125, we are ready for your comments. Okay, we're going to go back to you if you can hear us. It looks to us as though you are unmuted, but we will go to the next speaker and then come back to you one more time.
Yes, our next speaker is Julia Dowell.
Hello, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Julia Dowell, and I am here today on behalf of Sierra Club and the Regenerate California Coalition. I want to urge you to reject this lease amendment extending the lease of lease 4196 for seawater intake and discharge conduits at the Ormond Beach Generating Station to ensure a timely retirement of this power plant. The staff report captures the pollution burdens Oxnard residents face with existing industry. Can the commission join our call and retire the Ormond Beach Generating Station by the end of year 2026 so that Oxnard residents don't face another extension? I think you've heard today how urgent this request is. I want to highlight that the Ormond Beach Generating Station is designated as an emergency plant, meaning it's only turned on during very high energy demand. However, in the heat wave of summer 2022, the Ormond Beach power plant failed to deliver promised power, having one of the highest curtailment rates. These plants that are called peaker plants also spew the most pollution when they're turned on and off, and their pollution capture devices don't work. The State Lands Commission staff report on this item recognizes Oxnard and Port Hueneme residents face unfair burdens due to industrial uses in Oxnard, including the Ormond Beach Generating Station. The State Lands Commission environmental justice policy recognizes the urgency of addressing environmental injustice, especially as the impacts of climate change disproportionately affect disadvantaged communities like Oxnard. Community members in Oxnard have been fighting for years, as you've heard, for the clean air and coastal access. Rejecting the lease would honor the commission's goal to minimize additional burdens on and increase benefits to marginalized and disadvantaged communities like Oxnard, as outlined in the commission's environmental justice policy. I'll end by saying I really hope that the commission makes the right decision in rejecting this lease amendment and really stands with community and climate. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle, can we go back to the speaker? What is it? 125?
125. Yes. Please go ahead and make your comment with the phone number ending in 125. You appear unmuted on our end.
Am I unmuted?
Oh, yay, there you are. Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Please proceed with your comment.
Hello, I'm going to. Okay, my name is Daryl Gale, and I want to briefly speak, and I don't want to repeat everything that everybody else said about rejecting the lease extension, but first I want to tell all the young people that testified, they made me cry. Mm-hmm. I was so impressed with the wonderful testimony from all those young people. All right, I'm going to be very brief. The citizens of Oxnard do not deserve increased pollution burdens, more bad air, more diesel fumes, harming the marine environment, and damaging the wetlands nearby. Please reject this lease extension. Listen to what all those wonderful young people said. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle, any additional speakers?
We have no other hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead first, but I understand we have Liz Gill present, is that right, by Zoom from California Energy Commission?
Correct, Chair.
So I'm going to call on Liz to walk through a little bit of the status and the history of the lease. But before I do, I also was very impressed by the students who are here who've come down during the school day and to exercise your right and obligation as citizens and people in our community to participate in the democratic process. And I also want to recognize the City of Oxnard. This is your city council chambers. You have let the California State Lands Commission come down and take over in order to have our meeting here. And I want the students in particular to know that we do hold our meetings in different parts of the state, but mostly we hold our hearings up in Sacramento. So we all mobilized and relocated to come down here to hold this hearing here in order to facilitate your in-person participation, because it is important to us. And I want to say on a personal note, I came down last night and had a great experience. We went out to dinner in Oxnard and got to see a little bit of the town before it was dark. And it is a pleasure to be down here and, again, to have this hearing that affects all of you here in the location. And again, we represent the entire state of California. 5 million acres of land are impacted and are under the purview of this board. But we wanted to be here in order to look you in the eye and have this conversation directly. So I also want to say this and be really clear about it. The Oromon Beach Power Plant is on track to close down. That's what's happening. And because of activists like you who have been involved for many, many years, there has been progress made. Now, it's not been as fast as people want, but it has been significant. What we heard from the gentleman representing the power plant is that from 2020 to today, emissions have dropped 90%. That is a direct result of people like you fighting to phase out this power plant. So it isn't because the power plant's not profitable. It's because of activists raising awareness for the health and environmental impacts of the plant. I also want to say this before I hand it over to Liz at the Energy Commission. The piece of this that's before the State Lands Commission is one relatively small piece. And there are many other agencies that are involved in this process. And what you are going to hear is the context from the Energy Commission of how we are moving forward to phase out this plant. But before we hand it over, I want to also let you know that there is something in California called our 2045 plan. The 2045 plan calls for the elimination, for becoming net neutral in carbon emissions for the state of California. We are the fifth largest economy in the world, 40 million people with an economy the size of India, and we have codified into our laws that we are going to become net neutral in phasing out carbon-based energy in this state by then. These are some of the most aggressive goals on the planet. And in order to do this, it isn't just moving forward in phasing out facilities like these. It is also a process of bringing on an enormous amount of clean energy. Those projects, in order to be able to get them permitted and built, are going to take activists as well. So to all of you young people for whom this is your first engagement in advocacy, I want to first and foremost thank you and recognize that what you are doing matters enormously, and encourage you to stay involved and activated in this conversation. One, so that the phasing out of this power plant stays on track, and two, so that all of the work that California has ahead of us in order to be able to build clean energy power is actually going to be able to be realized, because it's going to be a process that certainly is going to outdate my time in elected office, but is going to be necessary for the next generation to be fighting for as well. So with that, I would like to hand it over to Liz. Do you want to hear from Liz first and then do? Okay. All right, Commissioner Peral.
I just wanted to piggyback on what the Lieutenant Governor just articulated, and I could not have said it any better. So I thank you. But I wanted to also offer my voice of thanks. As many, many moons ago, I was in your seat as a high school student that was interested in government, and it delights me to see so many of you here. And I know the sacrifice it took for you to skip, you know, school and classes to come and be here today, but it's a classroom of a different sort for you today, and I it's an invaluable opportunity that we get to see you here advocating. And I know it can be very nerve-wracking if it's your first time getting up in front of a podium and talking to folks like us. And so I just want to commend you for how articulate you were, for how prepared you were, and certainly for all of the time I know it was evident you have spent to understand not just what's happening with this issue right now, but also what's happening in your own community. That is just something that can't be overstated. I also wanted to just take a quick moment to thank the couple of leaders of this organization who I know were scurrying around in the back and making sure that your high school students that you brought along, one, could be here today, but also that they were ready and knew what to do when they walked up to the podium. And so I wanted to just take a moment to acknowledge your efforts in making sure that this was organized. So again, I don't want to overstate, and I want to make sure we have an opportunity to turn to Liz, but wanted to just also say thank you and restate the words that the Lieutenant Governor said.
Commissioner Kunkel, would you like to offer comments now?
Sure. I'll jump in. Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. On behalf of Controller Cohen, I want to also express sincere gratitude and respect to the community for showing up. And that's not just today, but last month and repeatedly for years, standing up for their health and their rights. Your personal stories today really touched my heart. This is heartbreaking. And thank you to staff, Jessica in particular, for facilitating the EJ outreach last month. As far as I know, that was the first time that a state agency facilitated engagement with the community on this topic. So that's huge and something to celebrate. But that said, just doing the outreach and collecting comments from the community to say that we did it is not enough. That feels like a box checking exercise. Planning outreach is the first step, but on its own, it's not real meaningful collaboration. That isn't the inclusive decision-making process that we committed to in our visionary EJ policy. So we need to not only listen, but authentically hear what the community is telling us about their own community. They know their community better than anyone else. This community is telling us enough is enough. This community is telling us that they are sick. Historically, power plants have been disproportionately centralized in communities of color, in low-income communities, with countless data supporting disproportionate health outcomes and inequitable, restricted public beach access. We have all of the statistics on this community, 77% Hispanic. Cal Enviro screen indicates the linguistic isolation percentile for this community is 78%, limited English proficiency, The number of people living below twice the poverty level in this community exceeds 67%. So I just want to repeat that today I hear you. Controller Cohen hears you. We heard many provide testimony about their own respiratory health. Nearly 50% of Oxnard residents report asthma, other respiratory health conditions. This community feels they have no way of escaping the harmful air pollution they're exposed to from multiple sources of pollution. We're hearing them express how difficult it is for their low-income community to cover the high cost of healthcare needed to treat respiratory illnesses and negative impact on the children's health. So this is an aged 56-year-old plant that Jen On told us today is beyond its useful life. Multiple commenters reminded us today the infrastructure is not reliable. The plant failed to deliver promised power in the past. We continue to renew and renew after the state has promised to shut it down. It has not been updated to current once through cooling standards. I know there's a waiver, but how many times are we going to extend that waiver and ignore impacts to marine life? There's no indication that the plant has been updated to use best available site design technology or infrastructure updates since its inception. I understand it's only used in emergencies. I'm sure we'll hear more from CPUC in a moment about the reasons why the overall state needs this, limited to a few times per year usually, but sometimes we might need it more, and that emissions have been significantly reduced. But how much toxicity is fair to target these people and this marine life? How long is it fair to block their access to the coastal resources that belong to all of us? And I also understand that we're only considering the conduits under SLC jurisdiction today, but it's irresponsible to ignore that those conduits are a component of the entire plant's infrastructure and responsible for the overall health impacts and solely responsible for the impacts to marine life. So we've heard community members refer to this as a toxic soup. They're begging us to fix past wrongs and keep our promises. How many times are we going to break our promises and ignore this community? It's really heartbreaking. Controller Cohen prioritizes the fiscal impacts to all the taxpayers she represents, every single one. And we cannot afford to trade the health and safety concerns of our citizens for a few megawatts of electricity and for $40,000 a year in lease fees to the commission. So in the long run, the cost of healthcare for these individuals far exceeds any benefit to the state by keeping this obsolete plant online. And while the surety bond proposed of $14 million may help to protect the state from any property damage, it does nothing to help individuals in this community breathe or restore public access to coastal resources. So we have the opportunity today to begin to break the cycle of sacrificing the health and rights of California citizens who have borne the brunt of pollution for more than 50 years. If the state needs a few megawatts of energy, we need to use less energy or find it somewhere else. We're not going to continue to sacrifice this community. This body is not responsible for energy planning. I'm almost done here. I just want to state the mission statement of the California State Lands Commission. We provide the people of California with effective stewardship of the lands, waterways, and resources entrusted to its care based on the principles of equity, sustainability, and resiliency through preservation, restoration, enhancement, responsible economic development, and the promotion of public access. This is our job, to champion equitable and sustainable public land management and balanced resource protection for the benefit and enjoyment of all current and future generations of the people of California. So in line with that mission, aligned with the community of Ormond Beach, and on behalf of Controller Cohen, at the appropriate time, I'd like to make a motion to reject the lease extension. And my understanding is that we cannot terminate the lease at the meeting today. that requires us to adequately agendize that separate action. So along with that motion to reject the extension, I would include directing staff to agendize termination of the lease at the earliest possible time, preferably our next meeting, and prepare a caretaker lease that includes direction to the operator to plan for decommissioning. With the decommissioning plan, due at a reasonable date, considering CEQA requirements. And also that plan must include equitable, meaningful engagement and collaboration with the community. So it's time to decommission this aged infrastructure and restore clean air and public access. And that process starts with us. The first step in the process is to deny the application. Let's show the community that we hear them. Thank you.
Okay. I have to go to the restroom, and I'd like to hear what Liz has to say. So could we take a quick break? And Liz, could you come back and walk us through where the Energy Commission is and the other elements of the work that you all are doing to phase this out over time?
Yes, happy to.
All right, thank you very much. We'll take a quick break. Give us until 5 till. Okay. I'd like to call this meeting back to order. Are we okay with our, yeah, all right, great, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. We will continue on item 51, and I would like to ask Liz Gill from the California Energy Commission, who's going to brief us on the larger elements of this item, again, the elements that are far beyond the scope of the State Lands Commission. Is Liz still available?
Yes, I'm available. Thank you, Chair.
There you are.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Liz Gill, and I'm the Reliability Analysis Branch Manager at the California Energy Commission. And I've been asked to provide some background and, I guess, context on the Strategic Reliability Reserve. As we know, climate-driven extreme weather events are making it significantly more challenging to maintain electric reliability, which we know is essential to the health and safety of all Californians, particularly on those days where with extreme heat, which is when electricity supply shortfalls are most likely to occur. We experienced rotating outages in August 2020 and reached the final state of grid emergency before rotating outages in summer in July 2021. To address the need, the legislature approved the Strategic Reliability Reserve as a part of the 2022 budget. There are three portions of the Strategic Reliability Reserve. Two that CEC operates that focus on enabling additional demand flexibility and distributed energy resources, and one that the Department of Water Resources operates, which can procure utility scale resources that were otherwise going to retire. So DWR contracted with several resources, including Ormond Beach, but pending the State Water Control Board extending the once through cooling compliance dates. SACWIS recommended an extension of the dates to the end of 2026, which is the end of next year, in order to give the state time to catch up on utility procurement and to continue to identify other contingency measures, such as those that the CEC supports through demand flexibility and distributed energy resources. So when we went to SACWIS in 2023, we were projecting shortfalls up to 10,000 megawatts under some scenarios, which is very significant. We are in a better position today due to the collective actions that the state agencies and the utilities have made, but there is still a need for contingency resources for this and next summer. Again, the reserve is only called upon if there is a high risk of an energy emergency alert at the California ISO. I believe this happened 3 times last year. They only operate above minimum capacity if we do actually enter into an energy emergency, which did not happen last year. And I believe GenOn mentioned something to this effect, but Ormond operated specifically at about a 0.1 capacity factor last year. So it's operating 0.1% of the total that it could have across the entire year. If it were to operate at maximum capacity, compared to 5% in 2020. And so while I do not have a crystal ball, I can say that we are cautiously optimistic for the summer, but the I guess the state reliability agencies have continued to identify a need for contingency resources.
Okay, thank you very much, Liz. So I just want to thank you for coming and for really reiterating the fact that this plan is in its final days. And this was helpful information. You're saying that in 2020 it was operating at 5% capacity, and last year it operated at 0.01% capacity.
0.1% capacity factor.
0.1. Okay, sorry, 0.1% capacity. Can I ask you something? Because I know that we have been investing heavily in the state in battery storage, and that the battery storage has helped us avoid having to trigger the use of these so-called peaker plants. Do we have additional battery storage capacity that's under procurement and establishment now, or have we mostly built that out?
We do have additional battery storage that is continuing to come online. I don't know what the figures are off the top of my head. I do know that last year was a particularly large year for procurement because there were pretty significant procurement deadlines for public utility commission jurisdictional entities. And there are procurements that are projected to come online this summer. I don't have the exact numbers for this summer, but there is still continuing to be energy storage coming online, and there will continue to be probably through 2045 and beyond.
Okay, thank you. And Liz, I also want to thank you because the California Energy Commission is at the absolute forefront of the transition to a clean energy future globally. And I know there's enormous pressure that's coming down right now from the federal government to throw more hurdles in our way. And the work that you all do is truly heroic as it is inventive and just constantly showing that deep, deep commitment. Okay, so here's what I would suggest. One of the elements that is part of the extension of this lease is this $35 million for operation and, most importantly, for decommissioning. Some of that we would get anyway. Some of that, if it just operated in holdover, we would forfeit. So what I would like to do is suggest, Commissioner Kunkel, that we continue this item to the next meeting. We have we could schedule it for our closed session, which we are having already on April 14th, to discuss further the ramifications of not continuing the lease. And in particular, I'd like to know what we would be forfeiting in terms of the dollars that we're going to need to decommission. So with that, I will leave it to you, Commissioner Kunkel, if you'd like to keep this on the table for a second, or I can offer a replacement or another, put on the table another motion that we would continue this item to close session on the 14th and then to bring it back for a vote at our next meeting.
Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. Appreciate you. I'd like to first ask if maybe we have the answer to that already in the room with the expertise of perhaps Seth or Grace. Seth, who's been here for
That's the question that I was asking when we were on break. But Seth, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think we just need to go through and like actually break this all down for the commissioners. Obviously, that wasn't the primary focus of the staff report, but we can get that information in coordination with the other state agencies who control the contract. So I think that's what we would plan to do over the short intermission and bring it back to the commissioners to discuss in closed session for direction to the negotiators.
So my understanding is that the lease expires April, was it 23rd anyway? So what will happen is that it will go into holdover no matter what. If we do not take action today, is that correct?
That's right. It would go into holdover pending, again, we could agendize it for closed session on the 14th and then for postponing this vote until the next meeting.
Yeah, correct.
So with my motion, the exact same result would occur, that if we rejected this extension, it would go into holdover. And in addition, part of my motion is to agendize the termination. I think that we can include information that answers your questions in the staff report for that termination.
Well, I think we can do it. We could do it one at a time.
At this time, I'd like to keep the motion on the table. This is Controller Cohen's intent.
Okay. Well, it would be nice to have her here, but do we have a second? Motion fails. So I will put a motion on the table that we bring this up at closed session on the 14th, that staff bring us an analysis of the lost revenue, the decommissioning component that had been negotiated, and then we bring the item back again at the next meeting. So that is my motion. Do we have a second?
Can I ask a clarifying question, please? With that, I think specifically finance obviously would need some number breakdowns. I guess my question too is around specifically if we don't take an action one way or the other prior to the lease, expiring, what's the loss there too? Because we would be meeting in closed session prior to that, correct?
Understood. Yes, correct.
Okay. If that's doable, then I'll go ahead and second the motion.
Okay, why don't we take a roll call vote?
Okay, excuse me. Commissioner Kunkel?
No, and I just want to add that I'm a little disappointed that we don't have the information required to understand what would happen if we did not accept the staff recommendation.
Well, I think staff is doing the best that they can to provide us always with the information that we need, and sometimes they have to go back and get it. So we can look forward to having that at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Commissioner Perrault?
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes 2-1. Excuse me.
Okay. Ms. Cato, what is our next order of business?
We will now take on item 3, which is the Napa River Benchmark. Brian Bush will be providing staff presentation.
I don't know if we want to allow time for people to... This will be boring compared to that. So. Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis, commissioners. I think this will be a little bit boring compared to the last one, but we'll do it anyway. My name is Brian Bush. I'm Chief of Land Management. I'm presenting on item 3, approval for the commission's proposed 2025 Category 2 Napa River benchmark rental rate. Next slide, please. The proposed benchmark applies to sovereign lands in the Napa River near Milton Road in Napa County. Next slide. As you guys well know, benchmarks are used to establish uniform rental rates in specific geographic regions with large concentrations of similar facilities, primarily private recreational improvements within the commission's jurisdiction. The use of benchmarks improves consistency, transparency, and efficiency in how the commission establishes rents for large numbers of similar leases, saving time, resources, and money for both the applicant and the state. The commission generally updates benchmarks every 5 years. Next slide. The commission maintains benchmarks throughout the state. Here's a map of the commission's benchmarks just in Northern California. Next slide. The commission has two types of benchmarks. Category 1 benchmarks are used for water-dependent improvements, such as recreational piers and buoys, that are used for the docking and mooring of boats. Category 2 benchmarks are used to help determine rent for non-water-dependent improvements, such as decks, residential improvements, and fill. Today's benchmark is a Category 2 benchmark. And up there is a table of the current ones. Next slide. The new Napa River benchmark will be the commission's, I think, seventh Category 2 benchmark, with a rate of $7.02 per square foot for the undiscounted rate. And if you include a 75% discount, the discounted rate converts to $1.76 per square foot. Next slide. Category 2 benchmarks are based on and associated with nearby upland values. To establish this benchmark, appraisal staff conducted research and identified 28 recent residential property sales and 2 vacant land sales along the Napa River near Milton Road, with sales ranging from $150,000 to just under $1.6 million. After isolating land values from the sale price, staff concluded a value near the median of $78 per square foot. After applying the per the California Code of Regulations, staff applied the 9% annual rate of return, which results in an undiscounted benchmark rate of $7.02 per square foot. Consistent with how staff applies discounts for similar facilities throughout the state, staff recommends up to a 75% discount for features of such as open decks. The proposed discounted benchmark rate is $1.76 per square foot. This methodology is used to establish the methodology used to establish this benchmark is consistent with all other Category 2 benchmarks, and the data used to establish this specific proposed benchmark was derived exclusively from upland land values near Milton Road, adjacent to the Napa River. And this benchmark will be used primarily to develop rents for leases along Milton Road. Next slide. This is just an example of if the benchmark being applied and what the rent would be. Next slide, please. And so in conclusion, staff recommends approval of staff's recommendation, and we're available to answer questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Grace, do we have anyone from the public who would like to speak on this item?
Yes, our first speaker is Charles Weekly.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Charles Weekly. I'm a resident of Milton Road and directly affected by these benchmark rates. As a community, the residents performed and presented to staff a detailed analysis of the proposed rates and demonstrated, in our view, the benchmark rates established by staff analysis is inflated by as much as 50% over our own evaluation. With the realization that land assessment is both art and science, the staff determination is long on art, but lacks the science component necessary to back it up. Staff has entertained multiple discussions with the community on this issue and similar others, and I can say without reservation, I feel they have both listened and acted professionally in our dealings. So the cooperation is not really the issue, it's just the evaluation and the analysis part that I take particular exception to. With regard to this particular issue, staff welcomed our discussion, but however, in a nutshell, ultimately indicated we rely on local assessment data throughout the state, and to deviate from this would be a bad precedent. As a group, we were told, in effect, if the assessor will change his valuations, we will reconsider our calculations. The neighborhood reached out to Napa County Assessor's Office and, directly quoting from his written response to us, stated, "Our allocations between land and improvements are for property tax purposes only and should not be used for any other agency for different purposes, such as determining lease rates." He goes on to say, "I had preliminary discussions with our senior staff who concur that our valuations, our value allocations are irrelevant to the lease setting process." The staff report thoroughly explains its appraisal methodology used to establish the benchmark rates and acknowledges the difficulty in finding pure land-based only comparisons, and then discusses the use of county assessment information as the next best available data. To use this data, staff compiled an extensive spreadsheet representing information covering 30 recent sales, and an average land value was determined therefrom. When looking at the spreadsheet, there are only two specific examples of land-only sales. That would be lines 19 for sale in 2021 and line 30 in 2019. While the staff report conclusion indicates a fair value upland value of $78 per foot, these two land-only sales indicate $27 and $18 per foot, respectively. Missing from the staff analysis is a third land sale at 1568. After originally being listed in 2018 for $295,000, this 6,000 square foot parcel sat on the market for 22 months and ultimately sold for $233,000 in 2020, or $38 a square foot. So the best comparisons we have are the land-only values, and they range from $27 to $38 a foot compared to the districts or to the estates, $78 a foot. The remaining comparable sales in the spreadsheet were properties meeting. May I have one additional minute?
Of course.
Thank you. The remaining comparable sales of the staff spreadsheet were developed from properties, meaning they feature residents and other site improvements, and such need to be reduced to the land-only value component for benchmarking purposes. To provide evidence of the disparity between assessment data and the community's position regarding land versus structure values, the communities presented staff with three recent property appraisal reports from certified land appraisers, indicating a widely different structure value breakdown than what the county had. than what the county tax assessment values indicate. To pick one example, line 20 of the sale developed on a parcel of 2021 had a fair market sale value of $615,000, and from that, the assessor assigned $450,000 to this parcel as the land value, while the certified appraiser put the value at $200,000, grossly less than one half of the value the tax assessor placed. So the concept or the point is that although there may be precedent to using the state's the county's tax assessment values, the county assessor expressly tells us that's not a valid use of his data. And when looking at the data that was compiled, you can grossly see how inaccurate and that data is. So essentially what we have is if we lump these 30 parcels plus the one I have at 31, essentially when we have garbage in and garbage out, an average of that value doesn't make sense.
Please conclude your remarks.
Okay. So while I stand staff and commission as a primary duty to the state of California and possesses broad discretion to act in the best interest of the state, I also submit that you owe the same duty and standard of care to the residents upon which this discretion is applied. So I ask that you reject the current proposal and ask for the staff to return to the community and have further discussions before deciding this event ultimately, before taking action on this.
Do we have any other speakers?
We have no other hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay. Do we have any questions or comments from commissioners? Do we have a motion?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Any objections? Unanimous vote. Okay, if anyone, members of the public, would like to address the commission on any matter that is not on today's agenda, please come to the podium or raise your Zoom hand. I will call on those who are here in person first. Next, we will move on to those joining us virtually. Michelle, please call on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Were you able to sort out with the speaker from the first session?
We unfortunately did not have their contact information, so we had no way to follow up. However, we did let them know to contact our help desk, so we could hopefully resolve that. However, they are no longer on the Zoom panel.
Okay, thank you very much, Michelle. So that concludes our second public comment period. Do any of the commissioners have any comments or questions? Okay, Ms. Cato, what is the next order of business?
The next order of business is, I apologize, I'm on the wrong page. Our next order of business will be our closed session. So item 48 on the informational calendar, Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session, provided that before the closed session, the state body in open session identifies the real property concerned and the person or persons with whom the negotiator may negotiate. In accordance with this requirement, I announce that the commission will conference in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the following item. Item 48 addresses 48 four applications for assignment of leases governing the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters, including the Elwood Pier, two mooring buoys, offshore Santa Barbara County. Negotiating parties are the State Lands Commission, ExxonMobil, and Sable Offshore Corp. Under negotiation are price and terms. The leases include PRC 4977, PRC 5515, PRC 6371, and PRC 7163.
Thank you very much. Now we will adjourn into closed session. Thank you. Good afternoon. I hereby call this meeting back into order. Ms. Cato, is there anything to report from closed session?
Thank you, Chair Kunalakis. Consistent to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, the Commission met in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the assignment application from ExxonMobil to Sable Offshore Corporation of four leases that support the Santa Ynez unit offshore Santa Barbara County.
Also, we would like to report out from closed session that the commission was considered a settlement offer in the litigation of Johns et al. Versus the County of Orange et al., and the commission rejected the settlement offer. Thank you.
Okay, that concludes open session. Thank you very much, and we'll see you at the next meeting.